Is that Shirley Phelps?
Yeah, that's how she said we should open our show every day.
Good times. She said that, really?
Yeah.
I guess I tuned out. 866-901-ADAM.
I can't believe people like that still get to me. You know, just blind ignorance, and it still bothers me.
You always announce it's not going to, and then you start talking to them, and then you get angry and riled, and it does get to you.
I swear, she's one private detective away from being set on fire.
I can't, it is amazing that no family of any military men or anyone has gotten to her. You know, we always talk about, there's two things we never stop talking about. We never stop talking about what a violent society this is, and we never stop talking about what a racist society this is. But then guys talk about horrible things for years and years and years, and no one even punches them.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're also a pretty genteel and litigious society.
Litigious, see, I'm not that genteel.
And we don't do that. Well, half are genteel, and maybe the other half are worried about being sued into the Stone Age. But, you know, like Don Imus is now in the news. But for all the years Howard Stern was in the news, or whoever was in the news, and everyone was outraged, and all the shocking things they said, and all the Selena fans that were outraged that Stern would say something about their fallen leader, and blah, blah, blah. Not one rock thrown at Howard Stern.
Nope, not a one.
I mean, there's not many countries that can say that.
Somebody shot the Pope.
Somebody shot the Pope, yeah. It happens once in a while.
It's the hat.
Although that didn't happen over, it didn't happen over here. But the point is, you know, it'd be just a crazy visual if somebody shot the Pope, you saw the bullet go through the top 3-foot portion of the hat, and then you saw blood start to trickle down from it. And then you heard the music sting.
That was actually quite special.
That was heavy, right?
I wish
there.
You got. I mean, it was good in my headphones too. But there were hand gestures involved that were pretty graphic.
So I was.
Hello, America. I hate your guts.
John Lennon gets shot, and no one kills Shirley.
Nah, that crazy bastard just missed Yoko.
Yeah, maybe he's going for Yoko. I'm now seeing Don Imus on the news behind your head. Therese apologizing. I feel sorry for the old man. I think he should be hated for not being funny, but for, again, this, it used to happen to me a lot when we would be doing something on the Man Show, and we'd be talking to the executives from Comedy Central, and we'd say, yeah, we want to have this guy with his ass crack hang out, or this, we're going to make some sort of tuna boat reference talking about some girl or something. And they'd go, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I'd go, it's a comedy. It's a comedy.
Right.
It's a joke. And then I'd say, and here's what I could never figure out there, as we talked about on multiple times. I do feel like I'm from another planet oftentimes. Like, you can turn on The Shield, or you can turn on CSI or NYPD Blue. You can see some Dennis Franz ass.
Right.
You can hear some foul language. You can see some very graphic violence. And oftentimes now they're doing autopsies and they're pulling out hearts and lungs and stuff. And then people go, yeah, that's a drama. That's a drama. And what you're doing is a comedy. And for me, it should be exactly the other way around. When you're kidding, you should be able to say or do whatever you want. Just like one of your buddies goes, I'm going to kill you. Bonaducci, I swear to God, as God is my witness, I'll kill you. But if I'm seriously threatening you in a very serious tone saying I'm going to kill you, well, that's a much different situation.
Much different thing.
So why is it okay to see Dennis Franz's ass and not someone else's ass when we're kidding? Why isn't kidding dealt with about 10% of what drama is? I mean, when somebody, when whether it's a TV show, a sitcom, whether it's on Comedy Central, whether it's Don Imus, when people are paid to say provocative things and attempt to make people laugh, and that's the whole thing about attempting to make people laugh. It's like when you ever do that thing where you're at a dinner table, and you're with a bunch of people you don't know very well, but people are having a few cocktails and they're loosening up and they're having a good time, and you tell a story, but it's kind of close to the line. It's
right.
A little off color. Maybe it has something to do with something a little bit personal, or could bring in a religion or a nationality or an ethnicity or political standpoint, stance or something. You know, when you go up to that line, because you're sitting at a big dinner table and there's lots of smart, funny people and the wine is flowing and you're thinking, I want to say something. I want it to be provocative and funny. I don't want it to be a knock-knock joke. If right, I play it safe, everyone's just going to look at me and go, hey, Shecky, keep it down. There's interesting people who want to talk. So you don't want to do a knock-knock joke. On the other hand, you know you don't want to go big and balls out. You don't want to go huge.
Right.
You don't want to go crazy and offend somebody or have someone start crying at the end of the room going, I have a son with Down syndrome, and you've just made a horrible joke. Where? So what do? You try to get near that line. And if it's noon and everyone's sober and you're with a lot of Christians, well, that line is lowered. And if you're at a strip club and you're with a bunch of dudes you just met and everyone's drinking, well, then that line gets snorted. Right. Off a stripper's ass. And then you get.
Sure.
No, you try to adjust yourself when you're on. When you're on satellite radio, you say whatever you want. When you're on terrestrial radio, you have to change the line. I used to do a show that was on in what they call the safe harbor, right. 10 o'clock at night. We would adjust the line. I had a doctor that was sitting next to me, and it made it okay for me to say plenty of offensive things under the umbrella of, hey, we're trying to help the kiddies.
Yeah.
So you adjust the line. But as a comedian, as a commentator, you try to get near that line all the time. When Bill Maher was on ABC, he would try to get near the line, and he'd cross over it on occasion. Now he's on HBO. He still tries to get near the line. The line is higher. The line is different. Maybe the line is lower. It's in a different place. But you try to get near it. Well, if you try to hover around the line a lot, just like a wide receiver that runs routes that are right along the out-of-bounds line, you're going to put your foot out of bounds every so often.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to happen. Or you get nowhere near the line and you just become Ryan Seacrest or fill in the top 40, you know, Rick Dees or whoever you become.
That horrifying life of $22 million a year.
Yes, you're damned to a life of making $20 million a year and banging hot chicks.
Well, speaking of which, Don Imus, who's been suspended for 2 weeks without pay, I mean, really, 2 weeks without pay
is a lifetime to that old skeletal bastard. He's never coming back.
Really, how's he going to get by?
Oh, he's filthy rich, probably makes $20 million a year.
Rich.
Is this going to do anything but draw more attention to his show?
And absolutely not.
No, and then the next question is he sorry? Oh, no. No one is really ever sorry. I mean, for things that they say.
No, I am actually sorry. I would never, like, apologize because I go under the umbrella of comedy as well. I was kidding.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I will not apologize to a group of people that mm-hmm. I did not mean to offend. But I will apologize all day long to an individual whose feelings I hurt, even if he misunderstood what I said.
Yes.
If somebody feels bad because I said something, I'll say, dude, I'm sorry. I totally didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
Right.
But if I said some broad, big joke,
sure.
and Jack came in and got a bunch of letters and threatened to fire me, well, no, I'd still apologize, but I wouldn't mean it.
Right. Well, Imus, of course, doesn't mean it. And you want to talk about no news.
This is
a shock jock,
yeah.
as they like to call him. Here's a guy who just says provocative things for 4 hours a day for a living. You're talking about women's basketball, which is already fodder for a lot of lesbian jokes and that kind of stuff.
Right.
He is attempting to make a story, a headline, funny the best way he can. And so he says nappy-headed hoe, just parroting back stuff he's heard in rap songs. I don't even know if he brought up hoe.
I think the
producer said hoe, and
yeah.
he just
said
did
nappy-headed.
It. I hate to defend other guys in radio because, as you know, all radio guys hate all other radio guys. And he should get a 2-week suspension for not being funny, but just talking.
Yeah.
And again, Don Imus, this is the other thing, too. Like, look, when the president says something or when Nancy Reagan says something, fine, when Joey Buttafuoco says something stupid, are we supposed to boycott New Jersey? Do you know what I mean? I mean, this guy just says stupid, provocative things for a living. That's his job.
If Joey Buttafuoco says something stupid, it means he's speaking.
It means he yawned. Right. Yes, if he said something smart, it'd be interesting.
Right. Everybody look for the other three horsemen of the apocalypse because they're on their way.
Let me pose this question to you. Is there the old person defense for saying something racist? Like Andy Rooney went on record as saying that he thinks Negro is an okay way to refer to black people. He's 9,000 years old. Imus is 66 or 67. He maybe is unaware.
Mad props to the hood, you.
Exactly.
Well, you know what it is? It's yes, but the opposite, which is... It's not like he grew up saying nappy-headed hoe.
Right.
It's he's an old guy who's in a young man's game who's trying to stay hip and current. So when somebody says, say this, or somebody says, hey, this is what it's called, when his producer introduces the word hoe, well, then Don Imus parrots back hoe. And so he's an old guy. This is a sort of Grecian formula. This is a sort of Grecian formula
verbal
excuse.
Grecian formula.
This is verbal Grecian formula. Wife likes touch of gray around the hoe. The point is he's trying to hep it up and doesn't really know.
Right. So poor, and they are so black.
Intention is a big thing.
Absolutely. I believe that to be totally true. Now,
he misspoke,
I have one that I kind of do on purpose. I have a problem switching from when I was growing up. I think people use the word Negro. I'm not sure if I remember.
Growing up.
I'm definitely post-colored. I never heard anybody say that. Seriously.
Yeah, I remember Negro, I think.
But I remember Negro.
United Negro College Fund. We remember those commercials. Yes.
They haven't changed that. That's still, mine is still a terrible thing to waste.
Right.
But the switch from black to African-American just seems like an add a lot of letters to me. Nobody calls me an Italian-American. It just seems weird. And I don't know one black guy... that wants to be called an African-American. And calls his friends African-Americans.
I feel like African-American has lost a little steam over the last, three years.
Dude, I'm going over to my friend's house. Who is it? Joe, that black guy that we hang out with. That's the way people really talk.
Right.
If I thought if you say we're going over to Joey's house, who's that? The African-American. Means you really don't know Joey.
The reason I don't like African-American or anything American is it always sounds condescending. It always sounds like a white politician talking, trying to be a little bit condescending, trying to let everyone know that they're nowhere near. And you know that's not the way they talk when the door closes in their office and there's two white guys standing there. There's not a white guy on the planet that says African-American to other white guys when we're in a room. But we speak that way in public. And we speak that way in front of black people. Thus, it sounds condescending, and I don't like it. And speaking of how it sounds, I think we do have a cue of a clip, I should say, of the Don Imus comment.
So I watched the basketball game last night between a little bit of Rutgers and Tennessee, the women's final.
Yeah, Tennessee won last night, 7th championship for Pat Summitt. They beat Rutgers by 13 points.
Some rough girls from Rutgers, man. They got tattoos and...
some hardcore hoes.
That's a nappy-headed hoes there. I'm going to tell you that now.
Oh, man.
Man, that's some...
Really, the guy I feel sorry for is Elmer J. Fudd. Who's the producer of the show.
Whatkus.
He went to Whatkus. Hootkers? No, Whatkus.
I think he's just...
Whitekus?
The Willy Tall.
I feel that the host of the show, Imus, felt that he was being outdone by his producer.
Tried to top him.
Yeah, right. Tried to top him.
Yes.
The producer had already said something stupid, but I'm with Adam. If it says comedy above the door, you take your chances.
And yes, the person, I know it from a psychodynamic standpoint, the person that introduced the word ho into that conversation is really the culprit here.
Right. Yeah.
But again, that's it, everybody. And here's the other thing. If somebody, some watchdog group, didn't hear that comment and bring it to whoever's attention and splash it all over the news, do you think Don Imus would have thought about it 10 seconds after the light went off that said on the air? Do you think he would have been driving home in his town car later that day thinking,
I think he drives a Hearst.
He drives the Munsters hot rod. I think when him and Grandpa Al were driving home, being chased by the guy with the pumpkin for a head, holding it under his arm.
Sure.
Do you think, through Sleepy Hollow, do you think he would have thought about that comment he made at 6:31 that morning and thought, you know what, I think I may have crossed the line there. That was over and done with and forgotten with. And here's the bigger picture. This is why news is bothering me these days. News can't be news because you're making it news. Right. Something had to goddamn happen. Nothing happened here. Or if something happened here, it was a 1.5. It was a guy who's been on the air saying offensive things for 30 years, saying one more offensive thing to one more group, who, by the way, I'm sure has never heard of Don Imus.
Right.
When you talk to those 18 and 19-year-old girls over there at Rutgers, I would be shocked if one of them had heard the name Don Imus before. So it's like, hey, the Crypt Keeper's coming to your campus and he wants to apologize. Who is that old white guy? And what does he want?
You posed a question, though, a little earlier, and that's different because you're right. Nothing happened. But then you said he's in the Monster Mobile with Grandpa being chased by the Headless Horseman.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm interested. Now something has happened. I would be Don Imus. I'd be going, hey, Grandpa. Did you notice the Headless Horseman's right behind us? He looks really upset. I think something wants to happen.
I imagine that's his mode of transportation.
You know what? The line changes so much. I was thinking about this. I cannot believe this stayed in my head this long. Because when you said it, I said, try and remember this, and that never works for me.
Mm-hmm.
When you said the line is always moving, but if it's comedy, it's okay. Do you remember how many times Ralph Cramden threatened to smash his wife in the face?
Yeah.
And everybody would sit and laugh.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the part to the moon, Alice, was their catchphrase. But he'd do it other times.
Honeymooners.
Yeah, on the Honeymooners. Right. Exactly, with Jackie Gleason, the great one.
Right.
He would threaten domestic violence at everybody to howl.
Right.
Can you imagine a husband on a comedy threatening to punch his wife in the face and everybody would go, oh, that Ross and Rachel shouldn't just beat each other in the face like that. That's just rude. The line changes dramatically and quickly. I think it was it Ricky and Lucy or the people from Bewitched that were the first married couple to sleep in the same bed?
I say Bewitched.
I'm going to go Bewitched on this
Rick,
one, too.
They had to sleep in separate beds.
I started that way, but yeah, I think it's Bewitched. I think I'm with you there. So that's an amazing line. How do you tell the American public you didn't know married couples don't sleep in the same bed?
I don't think you could say pregnant.
That happens 15 years down the road.
You couldn't say pregnant. You couldn't say, see Barbara Eden's navel and I dream a G.
Right.
Didn't slow the Ace Man down.
We'll be right back.
Didn't bother you. Oh, we
got
to go.
Oh, we got to take a break. But, yes, just overall, if there is no news, there's no news. You cannot make news out of non-news because you have no news. Obviously, there's not a goddamn thing going on in the world out there, or people have had an impacted ass full of Iraq. Yeah. Either way, Don Imus has been on the two TV sets that live over Teresa's head 15 times. 15 times in the last 17 minutes.
First thing that just popped on my computer. I turned my computer on this
story on every newscast.
Which also is, of course, I'm sitting around thinking, well, if he said this anywhere near 9/11, we'd never be having this discussion. And that's the other thing, too. Should the news or your story or your foot and mouth incident be based on what's going on today? Or shouldn't it just be judged on the merits of how far you put your foot in your mouth? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, if he says this anywhere near 9/11, it's a non-story, obviously.
Right.
Now, evidently, there's not a goddamn thing going on. If a school bus goes off an overpass with baseball players in it, Imus is no longer heard from. But he had the misfortune of doing something when nothing else was going on, or maybe because nothing else was going on. Everyone glommed onto this. This is big news. It is?
Well, as
a shock jock says something provocative to offend somebody?
It's how far he can put his foot in his mouth. And if he can put his foot in his mouth more than, say, 9 inches, it now explains why he's still on the radio after 20 years of not being funny.
It's a good point.
Thank you.
Yes, he has a...
Somebody loves Don Imus.
He's
take out those teeth and swallow my foot.
All right. We will take ourselves a break and discuss it at all use. The Rolling Stone just came out with their list of 25 guiltiest pleasure bands. Always a fun topic for me.
Fun.
I'm going to think of mine. You guys think of yours, and you guys give us a call at 866-901-ADAM. We'll give you the list. You give us your guiltiest pleasure bands. We'll do that next on the Adam Carolla Show.
It's the Adam Carolla Show. And now, Adam explains to 1780s guy, gangsta rap.
And in this vernacular, what's the difference between bitches and hoes?
Well,
That was Adam Explains Gangsta Rap to 1780s Guy. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Yes, torn from the headlines. 1780s Guy. Well, Rolling Stone has compiled its list of 25 guilty pleasure bands, guiltiest pleasure bands. Some of these I completely agree with. Others, like if you're a band, you have to think, on one hand, it's a compliment. On the other hand, it's a sort of backhanded compliment.
Yeah, why is it guilty?
Yeah, why do you feel guilty?
And then I got a tiny bit confused over guilty to guilty and weird. Like, I love Neil Diamond.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
But then I'd crank Neil Diamond up if you guys came over. I'm not guilty about loving
right,
Neil Diamond at all.
Dude, are you gay?
But I'd hide my love for ABBA.
Right. Mm.
I'd hide ABBA right now.
Well,
yeah.
ABBA did make
and one
list.
Of my favorites. Damn. Right there.
I know.
They're number four on the
Are
list.
They? Yep. Look at that.
By the way, one of our callers has called in with, I believe, the number two guilty pleasure band over on line three.
Let's see. Let's talk to Carson on line three. Carson.
Hey, how's it going?
Calling from Phoenix. What's up, my brother?
Not much, man.
What do you got for us?
Electric Light Orchestra.
ELO. Yeah, and I'm trying to think. Man, do I hate this song. I do like a lot of ELO songs, and I hate this song.
I don't like this one either.
Nobody does. It's counter to what ELO is, which is fast and poppy and melodic and big and scored and all that kind of stuff. And this is a sort of crappy rock song by a band that's not very good at rock. But I like ELO too, and I know it's corny, campy music, but it's well put together and it's layered and they're not ditties. You know what it is? I think with ELO is it sounds too processed. If you think about it, Nirvana and Pearl Jam would never be called a guilty pleasure band right. because they're stripped down to the musical roots,
right.
the core, the bark is all stripped off. Anytime a band sounds too polished or too smooth, I'm looking at this list, and some of the bands on here, I think their only crime is being too well produced.
Yeah.
Or some of them being, like you were saying before, Camp, I was making my own list to see if we matched in case, you know, we're going to do a quick game.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought three bands like we did, you know, with Music Mondays. So I picked three bands. They're all on here, but I'm looking at them and I really like them. Not really particularly guilty that I like the Monkees.
Well, the number one band is Rush. And I understand where that comes from, but I think it's because they're too polished or too smooth or sound too produced.
Or suck
ass. I hate this song.
I think you don't want to associate yourself maybe with a group's fan base.
That's clever.
Good point. You show me a guy who's into Rush, I'll show you a guy I don't want to sit next to on a cross-country trip.
Right. On the way to his meth lab.
Right. All right, so Rush number one, number two, ELO, number three, Journey.
You know, I'm not a big fan of, like, all these bands, but the songs I know. When the Lights Go Down in the City.
It's good. Yeah. Open Arms
what
is
a
good.
Wonderful song. I think any guilty pleasure song is the one you were listening to while dating a 12-year-old.
I think also
or while you're guilty pleasuring yourself.
Exactly.
Like Dave,
I'm never guilty about that. I'm all cozy with that.
I like to think about if somebody did a forensic investigation of my iPod after I died, what would I like my friends to erase off my iPod before anyone found it?
Good and service. Yeah.
How about your level of self-importance? Yes. That you need your iPod destructed immediately to find out the real you upon my death?
I need... I do have Britney Spears Toxic on my iPod,
right.
And that is embarrassing.
Good song.
Yeah, just trying to stay young. Journey, number three, ABBA, number four.
No,
we've all agree ABBA is good.
It's
and
ABBA,
and they've turned the corner, too, because in the early 90s, you weren't holding your head up too high with the ABBA fandom. But now they've become campy and there's musicals and all that kind of stuff. And if stuff hangs around long enough, like Bell Bottoms, it'll come back.
And me.
And Bonaducci, it'll come back. Foreigner, number seven. Foreigner's one of these bands that has a couple of good songs, but then they went a little campy in the late 80s, early 90s, and now people don't give them their cred anymore. They were a former rock band. that went through the 70s rocking, and then they come up with some of this stuff in the late 80s, early 90s, and then everyone thinks they're soft. The next band, or one of the other bands in the number five position, Chicago, is the same way. Chicago had a ton of great horn-driven rock songs.
Chicago's a great band.
Right, but they came out with three of these songs for The Karate Kid 2 and 3 in 1988, and now they get lumped in with the Guilty Pleasure. I do like this song.
This is Greatest American Hero?
No.
If you leave me now, you take away the biggest part.
All right, Brad.
We may be one of the brighter shows on the radio, but we can't sing.
Tone deaf than the next.
I think we can beat up almost any radio show in this town, but let's not get in a battle of bands.
I don't even know Brad. What is Brad?
Brad sings about finding a diary underneath a tree and reading about me. Very super. Think America. You remember the band America?
Yeah.
Vaguely.
Now picture them all in a gay orgy. And that's Brad. That's what you get, Brad. Brad is America. Is a softer, gayer America. That's what Brad is.
Currently, in my imagination, there's nothing softer or gayer than America. Mm-hmm. We gotta toughen up.
Brad. Oh, here we go. Yes. This is Brad.
You shall
to me
from home.
Come on, T.
See, this is one of those make up the fake word songs.
Mm-hmm. Keep me warm.
Know it yet, T?
I don't know this.
You're gonna know it. Can I guarantee you? I will give you $20 if you don't know it.
When the chorus comes, I'm gonna know it.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody get to the Jovi!
See that? Quiet, Jack.
Love Jovi.
Finest dreamers I ever knew.
More familiar.
You see, in America, all just making a daisy chain now.
Strasser is a Jew. See, it's one of the ones that I get words.
I know it now.
All right. Okay, now I like you a little bit.
Your song is by the band Kala.
And now you know Brad.
Different girl.
All right, you're cool, right, T?
I kind of like this song.
Yeah.
It's a guilty pleasure.
The softer, gayer one is when he found the diary from underneath the tree and started reading about me. Uh-oh.
Bread is Mike's great. Here. I played Bread at my wedding.
What, did you play this song, Mike?
No.
Are you still married?
Yeah. And yeah. We're both doing wonderful.
Are you going to have a baby? I don't know. Playing the baby sound is a good opportunity to ask.
So did your husband cry when you played this?
We both, yes.
What happens when man tear mingles? Can you imagine? Can you imagine if Bill's boyfriend cried after sex and so did Bill? I don't even want to imagine it without tears now that I think about it.
All right, I swear I'm going to find that diary underneath a tree song and we're all going to cry.
There is a Brad song. I'm positive it's Brad. It was one of the very first songs I ever had sex to.
Really?
So I would think if we found that, I'd go, oh, yeah, what was that girl's name? I really liked her.
Well, Jovi, number 9.
I've had sex to all of these people.
New Edition, number 10, The Monkees, number 11.
Totally. Yeah. Excellent song.
Motley Crue, number 12.
Girls, great tune.
Styx, number 13. I must admit, there's a couple Styx songs I like. Eddie Money.
I can't love Eddie anymore.
Yeah, why? Me neither.
Because I know him pretty well from, like, has-been tours when we were, like, right on the same level of non-success. The thing before the space of the first rung of the ladder of success is that empty hole. And we used to do, like, country fairs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he always had white crap in the corner of his mouth. And I just hate that.
Like spittle?
Weird dried spittle stuff.
And he'd think he was sexy and he'd touch your girlfriend and think he was doing you a favor. Yeah.
Cheesy money.
Yeah. Nicely.
Take me to the mirror tonight.
Eddie Mahoney is his real name, I do believe.
And he was a New York City cop, I believe.
Sounds familiar. Eddie Money, Simply Red, number 15. Kelly Clarkson, 16. America. There you go. Number 17, Wham.
Is America went through the desert on a horse with them?
Yes.
Shoot them all.
REO Speedwagon, Poison, number 20.
Poison.
Lionel Richie, 21. Kansas, 22. Ah, poor Kansas. I hate to say this, but Air Supply, number 23. A couple songs of theirs I like. Hall & Oates. They have a few.
They have a great.
They have a few cheesy songs that I do like as much as I rail on Hall and Oates for Family Man and Man Eater, and Britney Spears 25. My this is Britney. No, Hall and Oates. This is Family. Oh, Out of Touch, Out of Time. Yeah, bad period for them. I want to say my guilty pleasure band did not make this list, and I started thinking about it.
I have two that didn't
make it. I have a few, but Wilson Phillips.
Oh.
Definitely thanks. Bad, guilty pleasure music, but I like a couple of their songs.
They had a couple good songs, nice harmonies.
You know who mine did not make this list of my guilty pleasure? The Carpenters.
Mm.
Because I think they're sort of respected.
Well...
Oh, you starve yourself to death. You get my respect. I'm serious. That's got to take balls.
The thing about the Carpenters is the Carpenters were the tip of the guilty pleasure spear. Good name for my junk, by the way. And they rode the first wave of guilty pleasure.
Right.
People 10 or 15 years ago were going, you know who my guilty pleasure is? I kind of like the Carpenters, and people were making fun of them in 1990 right. for that. Now we've gotten used to it, and now they're iconic. There's no more guilty pleasure with them anymore. They were the first wave of guilty pleasure.
So now you're saying they're just good?
That's what happens. I mean, we have this thing where whatever the time is, we embrace it. Then we make fun of it 10 right. years later. Then we grow nostalgic for it and we start to accept it. Then we turn the corner completely and instead of making fun of it, the Carpenters become a great band. I mean, the Carpenters went from pop, chewing gum, whatever in the early 70s to a punchline, basically, in the 80s and early 90s to sort of the mid-90s where people went, you know what, they're a pretty accomplished band. They were no joke, to now reverence okay. for the Carpenters.
If I'm doing the math correctly on the 70s, 80s, 90s reverence, I'm in for a huge resurgence like any second now.
That's right.
Bitchin'!
By the 8 o'clock hour.
I'm expecting to resurge.
You know who's had a resurgence? The band that Kevin's calling about on line two. I've mm-hmm. heard a lot of them lately.
Yes, I have too, and I'm starting to turn the corner on them as well, and I formerly hated them. Kevin?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Band of Please, man. Kevin from Corona.
Duran Duran.
Yes.
I gotta go with you. I sent my wife to London to see these guys.
I must say...
My guiltiest pleasure song with them is probably Wild Boys or Hungry Like the Wolf.
I gotta ask you something, then. If you're willing to be this gay, and I can tell you're not gay, you're completely straight, right?
Absolutely.
Just that for fun. It has nothing to do with the topic, but just for fun. If you had to have sex with a member of Duran Duran, who would it be?
Probably Johnny Taylor, the drummer.
Yep, good call. Yeah. Very nice. I'm straight as an arrow, and I'm going with Taylor. Very nice.
I must say
I like it when guys can play that game.
I must say this.
Hey,
about...
I'm secure in my man.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right,
one of the things I have to say about Duran Duran is I grew up hating Duran Duran because I just couldn't stand the music, and worse, I couldn't stand the guys who liked it. I didn't like the dress and all that stuff. I have spent a fair amount of time with Duran Duran because they used to do Loveline all the time. And when people would do Loveline, it wasn't in and out. It wasn't an 8-minute segment. It was 2 hours of sitting around with someone in the middle of the night while they were getting drunk and opening their hearts and souls. Every guy to the member of Duran Duran, and they've all been in different combinations over the years, were the nicest guys ever. Simon Le Bon was nice. Warren Cucurullo, the guitar player, was the coolest guy in the world. They were the friendliest, most down-to-earth, most regular group of guys you've ever met in your life, and I can no longer hate them, but just how personable and friendly every guy is down to that man in Duran Duran.
I'll go with you on the exact same thing. Not only are these people not a guilty pleasure, I don't think they're making a huge comeback, actually, but funny and nice down to their roadie, and that is Def Leppard.
Oh, really?
Joe, the lead singer.
Oh, yes, yes.
Fall down funny, this guy. Yeah, we go.
It's a good lesson for anyone in business, which is you can really... take some people that were on the fence about you or wanting to hate you for whatever other reasons and just be a sweetheart of a guy or a girl and have everyone immediately turn the corner on your work.
Also, you can lose an arm and play drums.
That's right. All right.
That'd be a good lesson, I think.
Yes.
Are we missing one of your guilty pleasures, or did you spit it out?
I spit all mine out, except for Christina Aguilera. I don't know if she's totally a guilty pleasure because she has a nice voice.
She was guilty when she was an idiot. When she's not
that's
being an
idiot.
That's
when I liked her.
That's a 7-octave range when she's not being an idiot.
When she came out with Dirty with an extra R and everyone hated her, I couldn't stop listening to that song.
And the vagina with extra steel. Yeah, I thought that was all kind of silly. But now that she's just a 7-octave singer.
Song. Beautiful.
Yeah, she hasn't been around long enough and her pipes are just too good.
I love this song.
She's not... She possesses too much talent to be a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Part of being a guilty pleasure is getting the lion's share of your work done in the studio on the sound mixing board.
Yeah.
It's not belting it out in public. It's why a guy like Elton John almost could be a guilty pleasure for a lot of the songs he's written, except for he's just too goddamn good. He's too talented a musician.
I saw him on, and it was weird to see him on the Actor's Studio, but he was for some reason. And he sat at a piano the whole interview and was talking about things. And he said, well, I can write music to anything. Like, it was, like, the guy was almost retarded for even asking. And he said, does anybody have a book? And he grabbed somebody's book and he put it up, a book. Like, it was actually a play.
Bernie Taplin presents.
It was a play, I believe. Mm-hmm. Somebody happened to be a college student had a play. And he played it and sang it. And just
he
put it to music, and it was amazing.
Never not behind a piano. I was on a flight from L.A. to New York once. I was in first class, of course. But there was Elton John with a grand piano. Steinway, in first, in first, hand of God, hand of God. Hand to God.
You're an atheist.
Oh, no. All right. He didn't have one there.
Okay.
Maybe it was a Casio on
his
lap.
You know when 747s came out? They had a piano.
I know. They had the pub upstairs.
They had the whole thing going on upstairs.
I'd be frightened if Brian had this in his personal iPod, but J-Lo, who has a terrible singer and whose music is all produced, actually has a couple of songs that I couldn't help liking.
I wouldn't know.
Get Loud?
No.
Get Loud was a good song.
How about you get quiet about J-Lo?
I'm done and done.
I know Jenny from the block only because they wouldn't talk to her.
Who's this? RuPaul?
J-Lo.
See, it's bad when you can't tell who it is.
Yeah, it's always a problem.
It's really the engineer. It's kind of good, though.
Brian, was this on your... I was going to call an iPod. I'll now call it a G-Pod. Is this on your G-Pod, Brian?
I don't know how it got there. Probably part of a compilation
again,
or something.
I'm holding it for a
friend. I'm holding it for a friend. It's a friend's J-Lo.
All right, well, we need to take a break. I love this music thing. You know, one thing I've always wanted to do, and I know this is horrible radio because I'm going to talk about something that we can't possibly put together in the next 4 minutes, but we will before the day's up. There are a lot of bands. There's guilty pleasure bands. Then there are bands that where you know 8 of their songs, and you like 8 of their songs, and 8 may not sound like a lot, but I'm talking about 8 big hits, and you have no idea who the band is. Like if I said to you the Young Rascals or the Rascals, you'd be like, huh? They're bands that are like that, like Three Dog Night. You've heard of Three Dog Night. You can think of 2 of their songs. They have 10, maybe 15 big hits that you know and you like. I've always been curious about the bands that got a little too much love. Well, here's the Rascals. But I could play you 5 other Rascal hits that you would know and that you love. But you don't know. I mean, and then so they're the bands that get a little too much love, like they have 2 hits and they're huge and they've been riding on that for a long time. And then they're bands that have tons of hits and you don't even know the name of the band. Or maybe you've heard of it, but if I played you their songs, you would know all of them.
Or maybe they're just Zeppelin and you can't name one of the freaking songs, but can sing every word.
You know every one of these songs? You didn't know the same band. Right. You didn't know the Rascals did all these songs, or you didn't know who we were just talking about before that did every one of these songs. I'm going to try to put one together, but that's going to take a few minutes. So before we do that, I don't know if you guys got... your Social Security statement in the mail
yes,
recently?
I did. Yeah, yesterday.
I have a little tradition, which is whenever I get mine, I bring it in and I read it.
Oh.
And now a lot of people like it, and some people think it's pompous and arrogant. I really do it to motivate people, because you can start in 1980 where my taxed income was $232 for the year of 1980. I was young.
I think you beat me.
We can just go ahead and skip ahead to 1987, where it was $2,553. Now, I was an adult and living out of the house for quite a few years. By 1987, I'd been out of my stepmom's garage for two or three years by then, and I'd brought home. Or if you don't believe that, we'll just jump ahead to 1993, where I made $3,984.
Wow.
I was 29 years of age and been living out of the house for over 10 years.
Are you getting paid in cash under the table?
A little bit. Some, but not that much.
It's a bad idea to cheat the man.
Yeah.
I will go over this. As a matter of fact, just so you don't think I'm lying, we can have Teresa Strasser go ahead and read that.
How far will that go?
Over the air.
To what date?
Well, you think about it, because you think, all right, well, then you're making $1 million or $2 million, and now isn't that being boastful, or isn't it whatever? But I don't know. It's all under the same blanket for me, which is just sort of being truthful. So we'll just read it up until it stops.
Wow.
I'm looking forward to that.
Right. Me too. I've always wondered what Adam has.
Me too.
Because I'm not exactly sure where he got it.
Yes. Well, wasn't the parents. My social security statement for the last 25 years. Next. Oh, someone's guilty pleasure, Barry Manilow.
It's a good one.
Yes.
That is a good one.
Yes.
That is a good one.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back with everything I've earned in the last 25 years next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Sir and Danny Bonaducci on The Adam Carolla Show.
Yes, indeedy, deedy, deed. Well, I got my Social Security statement in. I don't know when I started getting these things. I think about 5 years ago, and it just has the breakdown of when you started, when you got into the system, when you started earning money on the books and got into the system. For me, it starts in 1980. It goes to, well, it stops a year ago
or
so. So if you want to know what I made in 06, you'll have to listen. And a year from now, we'll do that.
From what state will they be listening to us? Because we're going to be banging away in Iowa.
You read this aloud to your listeners every year, and how long have you done that?
I've done about 4 or 5 years. I don't do it down to the date or the day or anything. It comes in. It's interesting to me. I think, hopefully, it shouldn't come across as boastful, but it should inspire. And maybe just me saying I'm going to inspire you is boastful. Also, I think people hear a lot of my gabbing about being a regular guy from the San Fernando Valley, and they think it's just so much lip service trying to keep it cool, because in radio you have to pretend like you're poor, or at least you were poor. No one brags about being middle class and going on vacations to Europe and having parents that were doctors and that kind of stuff. They're always, you know, growing up on the wrong side of the tracks and blah, blah, blah. But when you hear that statement, I think it will quantify it, at least put it to numbers, what my life is like. So, Teresa, you'll go through the years and go through the numbers, and I'll tell you what was going on with me in that year.
And the reason I know he was living in the valley at that time is all the places he has worked and haunted and hung and built houses, I've lived. Nobody knows the valley that well without growing up there.
Danny has strangled girlfriends in many of the dwellings I've built.
Oh, I didn't draw on the wrong side of the tracks. I had some tracks during the time in the valley, but they're gone now.
Well, this is fascinating. Now, in 1980,
mm-hmm.
your taxable earnings were $232.
Yes, but you gotta realize that was like making $700 in today's
money. Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think I was working at McDonald's in Studio City, not behind the cash register.
Not
I was
good enough for that.
Behind the grill reading a sign saying time to lean, time to clean.
Well,
wow.
Then you had a steady climb.
I was 15 or 16, or maybe 15 and 16 in 1980.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So right around 1984, you were 20, and I bet that's the first year you really worked full time, because mm-hmm. you had a big jump to $9,367.
1984 started as a construction laborer and worked pretty much through the year. Money was taxed, making $7 an hour digging ditches.
But you made sub 10 grand.
Sub 10 grand in 1984. I'm now poised to move out of the garage I'm living in North Hollywood.
And then something unexpected happened in 85.
Mm-mm.
Your taxable earnings,
mm-hmm.
zero.
No. Oh. Well, what had happened is my grandmother decided, hard to put a crown on the cheapest person on the planet. My grandmother would have to be up there. She decided that she needed a kitchen addition on her crappy North Hollywood house. So I decided I'll take a year off of working for the man and just do it single-handedly. I'll do all the plumbing, I'll do all the electrical, I'll do all the foundation and everything. It was a crazy odyssey because I'd only been in construction for about a year and a half. So I wouldn't exactly call myself a journeyman carpenter, and I was trying to feel my way through it, but it was my grandma, so no big deal. It wasn't like the customer was going to ride me into the ground or sue me. So I took a year off and built a kitchen over, and all I did was argue with my grandmother the entire time. And she insisted on helping, although she worked in her underpants.
Really?
Yes, that was the... Well,
T-shirt and underpants.
Yeah, but she wasn't just underpants, but she would wear a shirt and underpants, and she would be up on a ladder painting. And I would say, Grandmother, do you not have any shorts or anything you can put on? And she'd say, no, I don't. I'm a grandma. I don't. What do you think? I have overalls. I have skirts that I used to wear to work, and I'm not going to get paint on them. I'll paint my underpants. It's hot, and I don't want to get paint on my slack.
I mean, it makes sense in a horrifying, disgusting kind of way.
It
now,
does.
Where was this home exactly?
This was in North Hollywood.
So you and grandma, she with no pants.
Yeah. There was a lot of stories. I had to dig a 6-foot trench in their backyard to find the main plumbing clean out pipe, or the main pipe run for the plumbing that she later fell into. We argued. We never stopped arguing about stuff because she was real headstrong, and she was driving me insane. And it took about a year, but eventually got the kitchen built. And now when I see it, I'm ashamed of it because I see all the mistakes I made when I was just a newbie. You know, it takes a good 10 years to really know what you're doing in the trades. And I'd been in about a year and a half.
Well, interesting, because about 10 years from 86 in 96, something very unexpected happens to your income. But let's first talk about...
Oh, yeah, you got to go through year by year, Teresa.
I will not skip ahead. Now, after you got that first zero in 85, 86, 87, and 88, very fascinating. In 86, you made $17,672.
Yes, those were the salad days.
The most you'd ever made.
What happened was, is I was working on Grandma's kitchen, and I...
It sounds like code for something.
You've been working in Grandma's kitchen again, Corolla?
Grandma has no pants.
I got a call saying from my old contractor buddy saying that they got a contract to do seismic retrofitting on horrible subsidized living in downtown L.A. So the bad news is you're going to have to go into brick buildings, and not just go into old brick buildings, but under old brick right. buildings. You will have to crawl around in the crawl space of 5-story, 50-unit, almost condemned brick buildings with 51-bedroom apartments, or actually studio apartments, no bedroom apartments, and it's subsidized living. So there's old crazy people or unemployable people who live here for $100 a month. You will have to go into each and every one of their units. And by the way, when you go into someone's apartment, you know what they smell like. You know what they live like. When you go into their single or bachelor, no bedroom apartment, you really know. And when they're nuts and old,
it hits you like I would get hit by a blast of hot stink every time I open the door, because it's old crazy people who never leave, who oftentimes defecated into a bucket,
right,
or who had some weird idiosyncratic behavior. But I would have to go into each and every one of their units, tear it apart, cockroaches running everywhere, crawling underneath the building amongst the dead vermin and stuff, digging footings and thinking, if there is an earthquake, by the way, this is where they'll bury me, because right, this building cannot withstand an earthquake. That's why we're here. But the good news is it's a city contract and you'll get paid $19.95 an hour. And I thought, I will go to Iraq and guard oil lines for that kind of money by sitting on them with a slingshot for $19.95 an hour. And here's all you need to know about how effed up this city is, and I imagine all cities. For some reason, laborers got paid $19.95 an hour, and carpenters got paid $17.95 an hour. And since I was the best carpenter, and I was essentially running the job, I got the laborer designation, and I got $19.95 an hour. Now, anyone knows you can get a laborer for $5 or $8 an hour, and a carpenter gets paid $20 an hour. But in the infinite wisdom of the city, the laborer had to get paid $19, and the carpenters got paid $17, and there was all this EEOC stuff. So you had to have one of every nationality and females, right, and whatever else. And that was another great money-saving device by the city, because we just had chicks and folks who'd never worn a hammer in their life, who'd never worn tool bags in their life, just milling around, bumping into each other and hurting each other because they had no experience, because we couldn't find enough chick carpenters or black carpenters or whatever it is to fill the requirements.
Now, at almost 18 grand, you must have been
there's where your
flushed
tax dollars are going by the way.
Yeah.
Yes, we had a black guy named like TC who actually borrowed one of my bags so he could have carpenter's bags and then strung a dress belt through it, but technically he fit the EEOC requirements, right, and we paid him a bunch of money to endanger himself and his crew members.
We did that
with an Indian who like had never been to India, never. He was my producer. We couldn't afford him anymore, but he was great, and we called him Haji, and he was this character on the show.
Right.
And they said, we really got to let Haji go. And then my boss went, wait. He's an Indian.
That's right.
I mean, like this. And I'm looking at him like, what are you trying to say, you crazy person? And we actually got to keep him because he was of Indian descent.
Mommy, can I keep him? He's an Indian.
Yeah, that's exactly what they said.
Well, you had a good year in 86, even though emotionally and spiritually it was not good.
$17,000.
$70,000. But then in 87.
17, yes.
A precipitous drop. $2,553. Mm. What happened?
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, in 1987, I am a full-fledged adult who is not receiving any money from anybody other than myself, who's living in an apartment, who's driving a truck, although with no insurance, and bar stool seats that have been modified in there instead of the vinyl bench seat that my Mazda pickup truck came with. But I am supporting myself and living alone. I imagine at that point, 87, I've probably drifted in between working for a guy named Tom out in Chatsworth, where he actually reported my income, and doing some under the table side jobs. I would go to people's houses and just put up a fence, or right. I was like some kind of a drifter who just went around with his tools and go show up at people's houses, and I'd mend a fence or I'd hang a door, whatever. They paid me cash. I wouldn't report it, and that was that. So I probably made a few more bucks than that, but not much more. It's not like I was selling drugs and made $200,000.
Now, another peculiarity in 1988.
This is the year I start working, so this is where I get really curious.
In 1988, much like in 1985, your taxable earnings, zero.
Wow.
Well, again, I was not receiving money from anyone, so I must have just worked. I wonder what Likas would think of my FICO score, by the way, in 88.
Are you that incredibly charming that you could have an income of zero? At some point, he had a girlfriend. He had a girlfriend who was a stripper. He ate. He wore clothes. And he has an income of nothing.
What year was the
stripper? If I had an income of nothing, I'd be the loneliest. I'd be the Maytag repairman.
88 could have been the stripper. I
built the Acme Theater somewhere in there over NoHo and just sort of got paid under the table. I was really just drifting around from job to job, house to house, getting paid in cash. So that's probably what happened.
In 89, things were looking up.
Yeah.
You earned your most to date at $22,543 in 89.
Ooh. How much?
$22,000 in 1989.
Yeah. Huh? But don't worry, because things are about to dip again.
Jeez, what the hell was I doing in 89?
How the hell do you have so much money? I've started working by 88.
Oh, no. No, I haven't started earning yet.
$22,000 in 89. Then in 1990... you drop down to about a third of that, making $6,312.
All right. And again, 1990, I'm not a freshman in college, and that's not money I made working in the book shack or something while I was a full-time student. None of this has to do with me going to college and working or anything. This is on my own, supporting myself with no schooling anywhere. And in 1990,
yeah,
I guess I'm 26. Wow. Is that what that is? Yes, I'm 26. I've been living on my own for, 7 years.
Well, when you were 27 in 1991.
Is it a good year?
You earned your third goose egg.
Oh,
Jesus.
27-year-old man. And according to the federal government, your taxable earnings were nothing third time.
This is about the time when I started to lose faith in the plan. This is about the time when I said, look, Ace man, it's time to take a long look in the mirror, because you've been banging away at this comedy stuff for seems like 6-7 years now. I guess I kind of got started when I was 20 doing some open mics or going over to the Groundlings and taking some classes. And by this point, I'm 27, coming on 28, and have not made a penny either in entertainment and certainly no taxable income. Sure, I was working under the table, working for cash and scraping my way by, but I was not doing very well. All right, so that's 91?
Yeah, that's 91. Then there's a bit of a holding pattern before things get interesting.
All right.
In 92, you earned $3,521.
All right, okay. I'm 28 years old. I made $3,500 that year.
In 93, a little bit up, $3,984.
Okay, well, that's 400 more than I made the year before.
Wow, that's good.
It's still 10 grand under the poverty line.
In 94, you made $6,442.
Well, you're on a roll today.
Now, in 1994, I'm 30 years of age, everybody. Now, maybe not as the calendar turned, because my birthday's a little later in the year, so technically I'm 29, although that's for what I made the year. Yes, I was 30 in 1994, and I made how much?
$6,442.
Which, again, I should be clear, it's like making $7,200 in today's money. Yeah, so before you give me the stink eye, you got to realize.
Now, did you have something, an epiphany when you turned 30? Because in 1995, things turned around.
I always said I can do whatever I want until I'm 30. I can kick around. I can get my education, my comedy education. I will pay to take classes. I will pay to be in an improv troupe. I will stand in line to do stand-up for free. I will do everything I have to do. But by the time I'm 30, I have to start making money in this business. And not as someone who's in front of the camera or behind the microphone, if maybe a writer, maybe I collaborate with a partner, whatever it is, and not getting rich, just an income in the creative fields, and I don't even know what that is, but I always gave myself until 30, and on as my 30th birthday was approaching, just 3 weeks away from it, that's when I heard Jimmy talking about boxing on the radio, and I had a bell going off in my head, not a boxing bell, but an alarm bell saying, your birthday is in 3 weeks, and you've done nothing.
Wow.
You've not made a penny, and you better jump onto this and hang onto it with both hands and see desperately if something can work out. Now, so when I was 30, that's when I started.
Out of curiosity, when you say Jimmy, you mean Kimmel, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Where was he saying this, from the passenger seat or from a television set?
He was saying it as the much maligned new sports guy on K-Rock's Kevin and Bean show.
Yeah, he had a boxing match, and he needed a trainer, and Adam called in and volunteered.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Thus they met. Now, that was a turning point for you, and you never looked back, because in 1995...
Wait a second.
Yes.
We're running late. That's a good tease.
Oh, my God.
I set a goal. I said by the time you're 30, you need to get paid. A modest goal. Not rich.
Right.
Not a household name. Not a star. Just compensated to be in this business. You can put down your hammer. You can pick up a big nose and glasses. And you can, in a squirting carnation, and you can, good name for the Ace Man's junk, and you can be, you can make a living in this. Well, I turned 30 in 95, and we'll tell you what happened next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Here's what's coming up this morning on the Adam Carolla Show with program director Jack Silver.
Yes, would you mind taking a message, please, then? Dear Oates, please call me back. You and Hall owe me big time. Don't test me. I still have the Polaroid. Oh, hey, what up, peeps? Jack Vance is trying to win $10,000 in Outlook August. Today, from the new ABC show, Notes from the Underbelly, we'll talk to Hottie Rachel Harris. Also, Jimmy Kimmel and Bobcat Goldthwait. Hey, maybe you can help me book the next celebrity on the list. One word. Gutenberg.
Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, Bobcat is waiting in the wings. But before we bring him in, a little unfinished business, namely my Social Security returns from 1982. I guess about a year or two ago. They stop it at a certain point.
At 2005.
So we got up to 1995. When
yes.
I was 30.
In 94, you earned just over $6,000. And then you decided you turned 30. It was time to make it happen.
I always said, and you guys, you youngins out there, can make the same commitment, which is you're really, as a man, you don't need to do anything in your 30s. Now, I should say 20s. It's now interesting. As I look at Danny, who did more before the age of 11 and a half than most of us do before the age of 35 and a half. It's a strange example to have him in studio. But for regular people, as a guy, get your schooling, make your mistakes, get in your fights, struggle with your booze, your addictions, eat what you want and screw who you like and do it. But at a certain point, and for me it was 30, it's time to start making some money because as a guy, you know, you women always talk about your biological clock ticking. Well, we have to support your biological
right,
clock.
Absolutely.
We got kids and they need braces and they need schooling and they need health care and they need everything else. And a woman who you'd like to support while she supports your children. And when you're making $6,000 as a 29-year-old adult male, the prospects don't look good. But my birthday was around the corner, and I always made myself a promise.
You had a wallet clock.
That's right.
Now, I am, again, looking at Adam Carolla's official Social Security statement that he received in the mail. And 1995, the first year you made real money, $36,221.
First thing I did was pay off the IRS. Who I'd been making minimum payments to each month for owing them $4,500 worth of back taxes. And I must have paid them $29 for 4 years. And when it was time to pay them off, I owed them the exact same amount that I owed them before. You know, we're always worried about the government and credit card companies ripping everyone off. The government. When you owe money to the IRS, you just pay penalties and taxes. You never get into the principal when they give you the minimum payment. So the poor just keep getting poorer. You owe the IRS $4,000. You can spend $10,000, 30 bucks a month for the rest of your life and never, when you die, your family will still owe them the $4,000.
I would love that.
Nice example, by the way, government.
Yeah, I would like the government to love me, especially right now. But the fact is, it sounds a lot like in certain countries, usually in Southeast Asian countries, when people sell their children, what they do is they get this money that the child can never earn enough to pay back, and you actually have bought a human being. That's what kind of the IRS does. You can never pay them back.
Indentured servitude.
Well,
R-I-T.
Something amazing happened between 95 and 96 that probably doesn't happen very often in life. You went from making 36 grand and change to the very next year, making $316,424.
Yes.
How the hell did you do that?
Must have been Loveline, the TV show, combined with Loveline, the radio show.
You basically made 10 times what you made the year before.
That's what it was, yeah. Good times.
And then 97 continued to increase, 354,661.98. A little bit of another increase, $554,453.
Nice. Maybe there's some man show stuff starting to trickle in. I don't know.
Big year in 99.
Hold on, Brian.
Man show is 99.
Thanks.
99 was a big year. It was the year you literally became a millionaire.
Very nice.
$1,237,903.
Literally a millionaire. I remember like it was yesterday, the conversation I had with my grandfather, because somewhere in like 98, when I made 500,000, I said, you know, I realized my whole family thought, because they don't have basic cable and they don't listen to the radio and I'm me, they thought I was still making $6,000 a year. And at a certain point, I had to have a conversation. I didn't have to, but I certainly enjoyed it. I said, you know, I'm making pretty good money right now. I'm not sure if you're aware of it.
How would I know that?
And my grandfather looked at me and he goes, have you made $1 million this year? And I said, no, I haven't. But I've made a lot of money, but I haven't made $1 million. And the next year, I made $1 million. And I said, hey, Grandpa, remember last year we talked and you asked me? Well, this year, I made $1 million. And he says, money doesn't buy happiness.
God damn you.
Man, there's no winning. There's no winning.
Okay, so in 94...
Thanks, Grandpa. See
there's actually a massage parlor on Melrose called Happiness.
Right.
And you can
buy it.
Money
won't buy it, but it will rent it for 20 minutes at a time.
Now, in 94, just to recap here, you made just over $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
99... over a million. So in 5 years, you went from 6,000 to a million.
Mm-hmm. You're right. This is inspirational.
It's pretty amazing. So 2000, 2001, you made around, you know, just over $1 million. Then in 2002, something interesting happened. You doubled your money at $2,085,764.
Good times.
Don't know, man show, crank yankers, maybe a Loveline contract. Don't even know. Well, so yeah, it's a combination. Maybe I did that Burger King commercial.
I don't think I ever broke the $2 million mark. I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Well, I think I dropped back down at a certain point when I decided to go write for the stupid Kimmel show.
That's right. 2002 and 2003, you were over $2 million. Then in 2004, $1,353,000. Then in 2005, you went back up, $1,661,924.
Mm-hmm.
That was your last recorded year in 2005.
Now, but don't forget this, though. At that point, he approximately, I would think, if I'm doing the math right, signed what I'm guessing would be a gigantic deal to replace Stern.
Well, not gigantic, but... big enough so that those numbers will probably move in the right direction.
I wish you weren't a liar.
If in fact, ironically, we're not canceled here next year. And
so if I'm reading this next year...
Well, whoever the news girl is.
No, please. I don't want... Because, by the way, two years ago, I don't like that one.
Rachel couldn't read those numbers. She's Canadian.
2 years ago, I was making $20,000 as a freelance writer.
Well, if you guys would like to bring your statements in,
not
I
pretty.
Would be more than happy. Well, that's what makes it good. And again...
If Gretchen has mine, I'll bring mine in.
Bragging and it don't making money doesn't make you happy. It just makes you not sad. You cancel out all the stuff you worry about and
noticed.
You start worrying about other things. And I brought it in. Here's what I always say. Whenever somebody talks about women loving guys with money, I say they don't love guys with money. They love guys who go out and do their thing.
Yes.
That gets them compensated. Right. But women are attracted to that. Money. This is just a way to keep track of how well things are going, but these things could just as well be being paid in muffins or buffalo chips. The point is the more you do what you want to do and the better you do it and the closer you get to the dream, the more of these things you get. We call them dollars.
Right.
They're really just things you get for doing what you want to do. And the reason I have Teresa read it is not to show off, but to show that when you're doing what you want to do, you can get these things. And again, you get these chips and then you exchange the chips for things you want.
Absolutely.
That's how it works. All right, we need to take a break.
I just went through that whole thing, but it was for a lawyer.
Oh. Wanted
to see mine.
We're going to talk about mine later
yes.
in the show.
Bonaducci has a bombshell to drop.
Dude.
We're not overstating it.
To that, we are not overstating it. The other thing I couldn't overstate is my love for our next guest, which is Bobcat Goldthwait. So Bob will be in here next. We'll push the news back a couple of breaks because Bob has to go do a little morning TV.
Ah.
So Bobcat Goldthwait next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Back to Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci.
I'm attention. I need beer up here. Now!
It's Bobcat Goldthwait on The Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah.
Really? Really? Seriously, that's how we're going to do it?
Well, last time Bob was on here, we pulled some stand-up from 1989.
From, that were discovered with Lucy and Dr. Leakey Jr.
Written on the side of a cave yeah. with running animals and spears.
So yeah. he got upset about that, so he decided to
get
back to the police academy.
How about you walk into I Think I Love You playing for the next 30 years? Come on, get happy.
Yeah, that is true.
I suffer for you.
Bobcat Goldthwait, everybody.
A big boo-hoo coming from Danny Bonaducci.
Bobcat, we met, I should say, I think Jimmy and I met. He used to come into K-Rock and do some radio back in the day, and we fell in love with Bobcat. And then we got him to direct some bits, some very funny, some of the man show bits you guys know and love were directed by Bobcat. And how much directing had you done before you directed those man show bits?
I directed Shakes the Clown, my fine alcoholic clown movie. And then I decided to take some time off from directing. No one would hire me for about 10 years. And then Kimmel called up and said, you know, would you direct? And it was really nice because he just really did want me to direct. And so, yeah, I did the segments, not all the segments, but a lot of the stuff over there.
Bob did a lot of the best ones from, I don't know, seasons 2 and 3 and maybe 4. And then Bob went out and made his own movie, Sleeping Dogs Lie. And I was talking about this with somebody the other day. There's a way to make money. I mean, there's a way. You shot this movie, which was nominated for the Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival.
So yeah, if you're in the dramatic competition, it was very nice. That's the main one. But a couple of people involved got suckered in and thought we had a shot, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it'd be like the movies were like, George Bush is a douchebag.
Right.
I think I saw that one.
AIDS babies.
Right.
There was one movie that was made by a physically handicapped woman starring a physically handicapped woman, and Sleeping Dogs Lie, a romantic comedy with bestiality. I'm like, I think we're in.
What is the plot of the Sleeping Dogs Lie?
It's a romantic comedy, but it's about honesty and the importance of lying and stuff like that. But
who has sex with the dog?
It's the gal.
She does. So she cheats.
She doesn't cheat. It's not like the dog's that hot. Dog's not like coming over the house.
It's in her past.
It's a discretion of her youth. And then you know how when people are in a relationship and they're like, you know, she's in love for the first time. It's like, we should tell each other everything. And even mom chimes in, you know, well, there's stuff your father doesn't know about me. But nobody knows that this is her thing. And of course, it comes out.
It's a cautionary tale. It's almost biblical.
About not telling all.
Well, I
totally
always...
Totally don't tell. Lie immediately.
I always say less history, more mystery. There's this part when you meet your partner and you decide, hey, this is great. We have nothing to share. We have nothing to hide. We're in love. We're going to lay it all out. So you start asking those questions and you start probing around. And sometimes you get answers, like especially if your life or your past sex life was fairly pedestrian. And she's like, "Where's the craziest place you ever did it?" And you're
exactly. They have that conversation. It's like, what's the craziest thing? You know, during sexy pillow talk,
right? You're like, "What have you ever done?" And I'm like, "I did it on a cot one time." And she's like, "Really? I got teamed at a biker bar." And you're like,
Well, can I say this?
See that movie, The Accused?
Yes.
It was like that, except for Donkey Kong. It wasn't a pinball machine.
And I wasn't, like, against it.
No,
drinks.
I brought on. As a matter of fact, the guys got tired, so
have you ever broken up with a girl because of a guy she dated before you and was stupid enough to tell you?
Yeah,
Yeah.
I broke up with a girl over a guy we all know.
What happened? Who?
Carrot Top. She had dated Carrot Top, and I couldn't do it. I could not do it.
Carrot Bottom broke up over Carrot Top.
This was like, this is years ago, too. I never even told him. This was 8 years ago. God, longer than that. I've been married for 17 years. This is when Carrot Top first broke, and anybody ever heard of him. And
this
I said,
is before
I,
Scott had heat.
I said, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't date anyone that ever dated Carrot Top.
Danny, if it's any consolation, I bet you've been on the winning end of that way more times. Yeah. Now, you'll never know it, but you dated Bonadil. Oh,
I can't.
Good. Fire up the rape shower.
I hope that Carrot Top's actually listening and finding out that blowing. I'm sorry. A relationship with a dog and dating
it.
Him is in the same.
So,
well,
so
what kind of dog?
Yeah.
So the girl go ahead. She discloses this to her man, and he can't. And it's an interesting dilemma, because there's the things where somebody says, well, I've had a few partners, or maybe I dated a friend of yours, or maybe I had a little lesbian fun, and it kind of falls under the turn-on category,
right.
And
right.
Then they're the ones that cross over from turn-on into...
Weird. Exactly. People ask me a lot, why is it the bestiality? And it's because if you're getting turned on by that, you're a freak.
Right.
And I needed something that really went so far that most people couldn't get past. You know, and her whole family has her idealized, and it's just
now, is it an ongoing romance with the dog, or is it a drunk
night?
No. She does something
stupid. She had one.
It's a weird thing she did in the at college board, and she says, you know, I'm not into bestiality, and it's like, when you do something and you don't know why you did it, like when you like touch something that's hot and burn yourself afterwards. She said she kind of went on and never haunted her until she fell in love for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Were you inspired
really
by something?
Story.
Like, did a woman disclose something to you that was creepy?
My dog's really hot. I think, yeah, like when you're a younger man, you know, and you hear about someone's sexual past, I think men can't get past who you went out with.
Right.
And I think women are afraid of who you might go out with.
Interesting. So we're worried about the past, and you're worried about the women are worried about the future. Yeah, there was that episode of The Bachelor or the whatever. I don't know what it was. It was a cable dating show from about 2 years ago, and the guy found out that the super hot chick went out with Fabio.
Yeah.
And went nuts on the beach, just started to projectile vomit all over the driftwood and couldn't get over it. And then it begs the question, well, Fabio or Carrot Top? You know what I mean? Like, on one hand, do you want your new woman to have gone out with a super hunky strapping guy, in which case you could go, well, okay, I could understand Hasselhoff. What year are we talking about? Or what if it's just a super uber nerd? I mean, which... would you rather? What's a better argument?
Men seem to hate both.
Men seem to hate both, but if I had to pick, it puts you in a class with them.
Right.
In some way. Mm-hmm. So if I have to go with the girl that dated Fabio, who, by the way, as you're aware, was over at my house for dinner the other night.
Fabio was.
Just casually dropping that?
Well, dude, it's the weirdest thing. My wife's best friend just... she works at a vet. He brought in his dog. She's really cute. He asked her out. Now they're at my house.
Now, does he have his goose helmet on?
Does he eat just seagulls or what? What's
I gotta tell you, I would love to sit here and make my money bashing Fabio because it'd be easy. Nicest guy
but
in the
gotta
world.
But he's got to be. He's Fabio.
What
no,
if he
could be a total dick because I wanted to hit him. Well, come on, say something stupid to me, Mr. Handsome. Nothing's better than butter.
Did you ask him about getting hit in the head with the goose?
Of course you ask him about the goose.
Let's talk about the financial aspects of this endeavor, because the person I was talking to yesterday or the day before said, yeah, I think Bob just made the movie on his own for like $80,000 or something. I mean, obviously, this is not the topic that big studios are going to sign off on. You raised the money.
No,
and
we
made
should mention that the DVD
own.
Drops today.
Yes. And also, I want to mention briefly that Sleeping Dogs Lie has gotten incredibly good reviews. For example, the L.A. Times loved it. And also John Waters, who's a very famous director, said...
PETA went crazy for it.
He said it's the most insane romantic comedy of the year. Rolling Stone called it demonically funny and surprisingly sweet.
This is not a fringe movie, although the topic sounds like it's a fringe movie.
But when we were filming it, we did it all guerrilla style, like you're saying, you know, and we didn't have permits. But the neighbor got a hold of the script. script, and she's like, "Can I talk to you, please?" And we shot in 16
she
days.
She hid Fido.
She goes, "This is the most disgusting thing I've ever read in my life." And I'm like, "All right, you know." And she goes, "There's no reason to bring this movie into the world."
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't have, you know. And then finally she goes, "You know what? I'm sorry. You didn't write it. You're just doing your job." And then Morgan Murphy's with me, and she goes, "No, he wrote it too." And so about 45 minutes later, the Humane Society showed up.
Really?
Yeah. But we got their blessing. I mean, at the end, it says that, you know, no animals were injured or pleasured in the course of making this film.
But you did have to cast a dog for this role.
Yeah, Melinda Page Hamilton, who stars in this, is a really great actress. But when we I let her pick the dog.
Sure.
Ew.
And
it's a cute dog.
Why is that gross?
That's gross. Well, if you just say, "Here's the movie," back in college, there's some peanut butter involved in a dog.
Can I tell you, I don't think it's all that unusual, because I remember having a friend when I was like 11 or 12, and she and her brother were a little freaky. And they would do things with their cat. And I told my mom.
I can't stop her in time.
I told my mom, I don't want to go over there. She was friends with their mom and would drop me off. And I said, "Can I please not go over there anymore?" They would do weird stuff with their cats.
Okay. Cats have rough tongues. That's all I'm saying.
But see, that's the point of the movie. Is, you know, she
it's
learns.
It's not that unusual.
She learns.
Would you stop saying that?
But the point of the movie is to learn the lie. You know, it's, you know, she says, "I learned that it's the living up to the lies that we tell about ourselves that makes us better people." But that's what the whole movie's about. She actually learns kindness and all this stuff. By the way, if I heard myself right now pontificating about a film on kindness, Barb,
what do you hope God says when you arrive at the pearly gates?
How come you didn't show the dog doing it? So. But the thing is, you know, the point was that people shouldn't disclose stuff. But when I was at Sundance, all I heard, you know, this old woman throws her arms around me after the first screening. She's crying and she's like, I did that to my dog. And then I look at her, I'm aghast. What? And she goes, no. I put peanut butter on my And she goes, "But I can tell you because you won't tell anyone."
Whoa.
So I told that story for the rest of the festival every time I introduced the movie.
I just made up the peanut butter. There's really peanut butter?
Does happen.
Oh, since I made this movie, I'm not into bestiality. It's not an exploration of bestiality. Everywhere I go, it's, you know what I mean? Like, and even when I tell the story about don't tell me the story. Like, when I was on Kimmel, one of the cameramen, who was a good friend of mine, goes,
"Don't tell the Kimmel story, Bob. Do not. He listens. Come on. Do not tell that story."
Do you, Jimmy?
A cameraman tried to tell you his story?
No, he did. He goes, "You know, the a goat's mouth is very soft." I'm like, "Yeah."
All right, look.
I just threw up in my mouth.
We're going to be on with Imus doing interviews. Yeah. Well, let's see. Betty White is going to be conducting a boycott of this show if we don't change topics.
We're going to be with the black sheep.
We're not recommending that you abuse your dog sexually.
No, it's not about that.
I want to know about the... For a lot of people listening who would like to make a movie can be shot now in digital cameras, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's how we did the movie. It was Sarah DeSrega. She read the script. You know, nobody wanted to make this movie, obviously. You know, it didn't even go out. I had a manager at the time who read the script and said, "Well, this is a well-written script, but I don't want to send it out because I'm afraid of what the town's going to think about your mental health."
Right.
So it only went out to a couple people, and about a year later, she's like, "Hey, we should make this movie." I go, "I don't have any money." She goes, "Well, just start and people will help." And it was even less of that. I mean, to get the print that was at Sundance was it's around 50 grand, maybe?
50 grand.
So my friend Marty and I put the bread in, and another guy, Mike Malone, and we made the movie.
Now, everyone's always looking for backers, producers, financial backers, and that kind of stuff. But maybe if you're confident in yourself and you can do it digitally and even edit digitally these days.
Well, half the crew is from Craigslist.
Maybe it's a good way to make money.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So you can put up 50 grand, and what do you think the movie's brought in? I mean, it's made $1 million, right? Or will by the time the dust settles. And if people think about that financially, it's 3 months worth of work, and you've just made yourself a nice lump.
Well, I did leave the Kimmel show. That's all I'm saying.
Ah.
No, I didn't. You know, that is the thing. I didn't leave it. But yeah,
Bob was directing. We sold by it. The way.
Yeah. By the way, my favorite job I ever had.
So are you going on? Obviously, you have another film project in the works.
Well, I'm trying to write some more stuff, and I'll see if
somebody
go
rapes
and make
a
it.
Goose or something. Or
Fabio.
We're just spitballing here, but I like it. I like the cut of your jib.
All right.
How can I buy this DVD?
We need to take a break. Yes. With money. Do we buy? Because it drops today.
It does drop today, and I think it's in every place you normally would have a DVD for sale.
And can I just say one thing to my friend Teresa?
Yes.
The next time somebody tells you a story about their friend doing it with a dog,
cat,
don't say, "Oh, that's not that weird."
I do think it's weird, but I don't think it's that unusual.
Okay, I sit next to you and defend you every day and talk about how cute and nice and sweet you are. Don't say it's not that weird to bone the dog.
I'm telling you. There are creepy kids in my neighborhood that abuse their animals.
Women have less of a problem in this movie than dudes do.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, Sleeping Dogs Lie out in DVD. Support our artist friends like Bobcat Goldthwait. We'll take a quick break. Tea.
Yes.
You'll tee up the news when we come back?
Absolutely.
Give us a quick tease.
Barack Obama on Letterman.
No, I don't believe in that.
What doesn't he believe in?
Take a quick break. Do that next on the Adam Carolla Show. Yeah, those of you who heard Ryan Seacrest in that mix, keep in mind it's Ryan Seacrest's hairstylist.
Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
Who was booked. I might add this. We decided, well, there are certain songs that Rich Banks does that are a little bit too hot for the air, so we moved them to AdamCarolla.com. But the problem was, is this one, this next song, is too hot even for that.
Wow.
Because that's CBS sponsored, or I know we could put it there, right. But who the hell wants to argue with Jack Silver about
Harry
something?
Harry Potter's retarded cousin.
Who wants to argue with Harry Potter's retarded cousin about another thing? So that is on my MySpace. That's on Adam Carolla's MySpace. So,
too hot for the radio, too hot for AdamCarolla.com, and only only clean enough for your personal MySpace.
Yes, and that is another fantastic effort from Rich Banks on Mike August's booking ability or inability.
Yes,
as
I think
it were.
This is that one's, if I'm not mistaken, to the tune of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That's right. You do the math and then laugh your ass off on MySpace or Adam Carolla's MySpace?
I think it's Adam Carolla's MySpace page.
All right, so you can.
That's the address.
You can go see that
or
listen to that.
You can get through AdamCarolla.com.
Go to AdamCarolla.com, then you'll go to MySpace. It's like going to the basement of a biker bar. It's like you've gone to AdamCarolla.com, and there's a big fat guy named Goose with a beer, and he goes, "You really want filth?" And you go, "Wow, what could be worse than this?" Go down to the basement. That's MySpace, and that's where you find that song. Too hot for the internet, everybody. All right, speaking of too hot, Teresa.
Yes.
What's going on in the news?
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
In case you missed it, radio personality Don Imus made a comment last Wednesday on his radio show. That was the day after Rutgers lost the NCAA Women's Championship game to Tennessee. Imus and his producer, Bernard McGuirk, were discussing the team, which includes 8 black women.
You want to talk about hobbling your kid in the get laid department at birth? Hey, the guy, last name McGuirk.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Let's call him Bernard. Let's really not get him late until his third year of college.
Give him a name that's going to rhyme with the jerk all the way through elementary and junior high school.
And here's what else didn't help him. He seems to have a speech impediment. Listen carefully.
So I watched the basketball game last night between a little bit of Rutgers and Tennessee, the women's final.
Yeah, Tennessee won last night. 7th championship for Pat Summit I Man. They beat Rutgers by 13 points.
Some rough girls from Rutgers, man. They got tattoos and
some hardcore hoes.
That's a nappy-headed hoes there. I'm going to tell you that now. Oh, man, that's some move.
Yeah, he was going to leave it at hardcore with the tattoos, but somebody chimed in and said hoes, and he went down that path. And now it's a whole big racial thing. But look, everybody, the guy's been on the air for 30 years saying things that anger people and all groups of all kinds. He's a shock jock for the love of Christ. If we lost our bearings as a humanity, that's what they do. They say things that make people talk and they make people angry and they get groups outraged. He's not the president. He's a morning DJ. Right. For the love of Christ, is there nothing else going on in the news?
Well, Al Sharpton came out of his shell.
So that answer's no.
To insist that Don Imus apologize. So first, Imus apologized on his own show. Then he went on Sharpton's show.
Ms. Imus, do you think it's funny to call people nappy-headed hoes?
No, I don't.
So you thought it was funny Wednesday morning?
I don't know if I thought it was funny or not, but it was a situation where we're sitting there rapping, see? And I'm saying, I watched the game last night between the Rutgers and Tennessee. And I heard one of the sportscasters say, so Rutgers is a lot tougher team. And I got on the air, and I said, man, they are tough. I said, they got tattoos. And then somebody else said something. And then I said that. So and at the time I said it, because I'm talking about two African-American teams.
African-American teams. Yeah.
I didn't think. I mean, I know. I'm just telling you what I thought.
Nobody says African-American when they're alone.
Nope.
Nobody ever thinks African-American.
Nope.
We look around and see if there are any African-Americans around, and then we say African-American. That's how African-American works. Sadly, that's how it works. And by the way, now, was he interviewed? Now, I don't know where Sharpton's radio show is. It out? Is it just syndicated into Hymietown, or is it out of Hymietown? how does that work?
Yeah, I
know you can hear him in New York.
It's headquartered in Hymietown.
Headquartered in Hymietown?
Yeah.
No, that was Jackson,
okay.
Right?
That was Jesse Jackson, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Who?
Yeah. Very.
But I understand, Adam.
Yes, you know what I mean.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean now. You mentioned that it's clearly a slow news week when the Don Imus story is... taken over.
Now listen, I don't want to get in trouble for making nothing of a guy who made a racial slur, but people, this is not news. This is not
well,
news.
Well, you make an interesting point, and in journalism school, one thing they taught us is that there's always a crime wave when there's a slow news day. There's nothing to put on the front page of the paper, so you write about a trend, a crime wave. And
yes,
then
there's officially nothing going on, and here's how you know it's not news. You don't care.
Right.
You just don't care. Don Imus seems like a hateful old man who's being overcompensated for not being very funny. He has to fill 4 hours every morning, and eventually you put your foot in your mouth. And this, when it comes to crossing the line, you know, win a wee for a wee or whatever the hell it is, people dying, this is a faux pas. I don't call it a full frontal attack to the African-American community.
Now, no, you know what? It seems more of a sexist comment than
I would definitely say he's essentially calling those women men, or at least thugs, or what have you.
I would say it was equal parts sexist and racist. Now here is some
add a little spice. What else he cooked up in that?
Yeah,
so the little old man chaser. Here is NBC news anchor Brian Williams on NBC dripping with gravitas about the Don Imus situation and how it is going to end up.
Good evening. Tonight, NBC News has announced radio host Don Imus, whose national morning show is simulcast on our cable network, MSNBC, is being suspended. He will not be seen on MSNBC for 2 weeks beginning Monday because of comments he made last week.
So that was that.
That's that. 2 weeks off for Don Imus.
I can't believe I'm not going to be able to see an old man sleeping in front of a microphone right. with a cowboy hat on and wearing headphones from a Pan Am flight I took in the 60s. I can't believe they're going to deprive me of that. 2 weeks. If I don't see an old guy sleeping in front of a microphone with sunglasses on, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do for 2 weeks.
By the way, I would assume on the TVs that live over T's head that the two chicks in the Rutgers sweatshirts might be part of the team. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, we're awaiting a news conference from the Rutgers players.
Oh, God.
I don't know. I don't know if they had any blue-eyed devils on that team or not. Did they win? Hold on.
They
lost?
Tennessee beat them. Tennessee has African-American players as well as Rutgers.
All right.
This is amazing.
Either way, he has to, poor old man's got to go around apologizing for something he doesn't care about it.
Yes, exactly.
I've said this many times, and it reminds me of a story. Five, 6 years ago, Dr. Drew decided he wanted to enter his kids in the Pine Box Derby with the Cub Scouts, where he built the little roller cars, the little gravity cars, not the big ones you climb into, but the little ones you let go down the thing. A lot of folks have a lot of plans that involve me. Yes, I've realized.
I knew that right away.
A lot of folks have plans about doing additions to their house and about moving stuff that involves trucks. And a lot of people have a lot of plans, and their arrows point to me. So Drew decided he wanted to enter his kids in the Pine Box Derby, which made him a good dad. And then he said to me, you need to build their cars now, because I have no tools and I don't know what I'm doing. So I said, fine, bring them by. And I brought the kids by the wood shop, and I got out the bandsaw and the belt sander. And next thing you know, I carved out a little aerodynamic car for his two sons. And then when we were leaving, we stopped at the edge of the driveway, and I was saying, okay, kids, bye-bye, see you next year. And he said, now, Drew said to his sons, now thank Adam for doing that for you. And the kids said, I thanked him earlier in the wood shop. And Drew said, well, thank him again. And the kid said, I already said thanks. I didn't forget. And I said, yeah, he said thanks. Yeah, well, I want you to thank him. And the next thing I know, Drew was yelling at his two sons, thank him. You're supposed to thank him. And I said, Drew, you know, it doesn't mean quite as much when you're yelling
right
at the person to thank me. It's like if I stood next to someone and yelled, compliment Bonaducci. Do it. I don't think he's funny. Say he's funny. Say it now. How much would it mean if I yelled at the person?
You are a blinding, brilliant light.
So when these guys have to go,
I get it,
when these guys have to go on their apology tours because they're going to be canceled, thrown off the air, fined, disciplined, whatever, how much does it really mean to the community they're apologizing to when their hefty paychecks are hanging over their head, going to be taken away? You want someone to apologize without asking, not being forced to. It's like one of these confessions the Iranians get out of a sailor. Does it mean anything? They're holding a sword just out of the frame. The guy thinks he's going to lose his head, so of course he embraces Allah, but it means nothing to anyone who's watching it.
Yes.
Thank you. The more you know.
Yeah.
Yes, when you have to say, do I look pretty tonight? Yes. No, I don't. It means nothing.
That's right. Because
you had to ask. Now, Barack Obama, Democratic hopeful, was on David Letterman last night, and Letterman asked him if he would consider running with Senator Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. You don't run for second.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't believe in that. Yeah.
But that would be a powerful ticket, undeniably. That would be a powerful ticket.
Which order are we talking
about? Well, let's say.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know what else I like about Imus?
What?
When you're old, at a certain point in your age, you cannot experience heat. You wear 3 or 4 jackets. Right. He is in a studio under hot lights for 4 hours with a thermostat 4 feet away from him that he could put at 72 degrees. Yet he wears a flannel shirt. He then wears a jean jacket, then he wears a leather jacket, and he wears a duster over there. He wears like 9.
Yes.
Old guys who wear 9 jackets. I think they're trying to pad themselves because they're just a bag of bones or something. But what is that point where you think it's a good idea to wear 4 or 5 coats when you get older?
If you look at him,
damn exciting.
He's
stuff.
Wearing a duster, a cowboy hat, sunglasses. He's indoors.
I'm not trying to be funny and paint a picture. If you look at Don Imus closely, his face starts to droop during the course of his show as if he is melting.
You mean you can actually see it?
His jowls start as a jowly old man, but they go down past his chin by the end of his show.
And
look at that crazy looking guy.
I swear to God, he gets $20 million a year and he doesn't even form sentences anymore. It's like the guy's reading the news. Like, hey, what's going on over in Iraq?
How about that Rutgers football team there, I bet?
Wake up, Don.
Huh? Where
Don,
am I?
I'm about to wrap the news.
Jesus, I'm dressed like I just got off a horse. Where am I?
But no, that was the last movie.
I'm Teresa Strasser. That's the news.
Teresa Strasser with the real news. You, CNN.
All right. Well, speaking of news, we have our own news story, a bomb to be dropped by our own Danny Bonaducci. We learned about this, well, I think yesterday after the show. Danny pulled us aside and told us news that, well, it rocked my world, and I that is not an exaggeration.
Oh,
so
too, buddy.
Yeah. Danny will, as only Danny can do, Danny will tell us all about the bombshell that went off in his life yesterday, next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Danny! I'm a has-been still.
He's the man.
Dynamite!
With red hair, freckles, and bedazzled girly pants.
I bedazzled those. those front pockets myself.
Danny!
Oh, ha, 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 ha.
Karate dude.
I'm the transvestite guy.
Beat up a tranny and got arrested in the nude.
That is the greatest story I have ever heard.
Booze, loots, cowboy boots. He smokes three packs. Even let an old lady shave his sack.
That's how I was raised.
We thought long and hard about playing that novelty insulting intro because of the gravity of the news that Danny is about to deliver, but we said, what the hell? Yeah.
By long and hard, 20 to 30 seconds.
Yes. Yeah. So Danny has, and the good thing, what's nice, I'd say, about this morning show and Danny especially is a lot of morning shows, you think you know the personalities, but you do not know what goes on behind the scenes, and they keep it that way. Our show, whether it's T talking about a story of a train or the Hershey Express, whatever it is, or me telling you how much money I made in 05. Whatever it is, we attempt to be honest on this show. There's certain things we feel are personal, but we try to let you in on our world. And Danny's going through something very personal right now that he's been brave enough to share with us.
Wow, that was a very nice and serious intro, which is weird because this is actually serious. And if I were to make it, try and make it funny, it would distort and diminish my slight and maybe no chance of making it not happen. I don't see a way out, really. Mm-hmm. So here's the deal. As you know, and it was on TV, and it was Gretchen's idea to start that television show, Breaking Bonaducci, in therapy, discussing the fact that I had cheated. Mm-hmm. So she opened that door and wanted that door opened, and possibly in a way to punish me for it, possibly just to do good television, because that's what it was. But it was her idea and not a secret she needed kept. I didn't cheat on her twice. Once by actually physically cheating on her, and then second time by telling people about it. That was her idea.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, if you ever do that again, I will leave you. So I never did it again.
You never cheated again?
No, never. Mm-hmm. Then, the last, for quite a while, she was talking about drinking. She, you gotta quit drinking, man. I'm gonna leave you.
Mm-hmm.
And I got all drunk, and this was a bad one. This was about a year and a half ago. And I woke up somewhere, and I don't know why. I think I've said this before. Just maybe it's only people like me. I don't know. But I immediately woke up in a place I didn't recognize. And the first thing I do is look for the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody had to have gotten killed in the middle of the night. I don't remember doing it. The cops have to be on the way. There's a hooker somewhere hanging in the closet. This can't be good.
Mm-hmm.
No hookers, no dead bodies. I'm just in a very nice little spotlessly clean apartment. I finally wake up the nerves, and I know my wife is not kidding. She said it, you know, to Oprah. If he drinks anymore, I'm leaving him.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that's it. I'm ruined. She's leaving me, and I'm nothing without Gretchen. Never have been, never will be.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally wake up the nerve to call her, and I tell her, I guess I fell off the wagon. I don't even know where I am. And she said, I said, I can see the Capitol Records building from here. So I think I can get home, if that's okay. And she said, you really don't remember what happened? And I said, no, I don't. She goes, open the closet. So I open the closet, and there's all my clothes. She goes, you live there. I kicked you out 3 days ago.
And you moved to Epcot Center in Orlando?
I moved into some building up the street.
Oh, you're still in town. Oh, that's Capitol Records. I thought it was a miniature one.
No, the real one.
Okay.
So it must have been a bad one. But we started, you know, I know that I can see her at church. She won't miss church. So that's what I do. I start
now
going.
Now, we're a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
All right.
So I start going to church, and all of a sudden I've got kind of this community of friends, and I start to like it, and I start to go whether she goes or not. And I volunteer for everything. I volunteered to move the chairs, to clean the church, for, you know, I just want to be there. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get all drunk at church.
Right.
And maybe win my wife back. And damn if I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because one day it just dawns on me, I drink every day and a lot. And one day it just dawns on me, I haven't had a drink in weeks. It just, like I haven't. I haven't tried not to. I just haven't had a drink. And I guess she notices the change and sure enough takes me back.
Mm-hmm.
But as the time goes by and I'm more sober, I think she realizes
that there's more to me than bad habits that she doesn't particularly care for. And she's starting to, in my opinion, ask me to change things about my personality, about my posture, the way I speak, at the level at which I speak. And I'm thinking, this really isn't fair. And she keeps saying, you know, maybe we should just split up. Maybe we should just split up. I'm thinking, we're the couple that got married on the first date. We've been married 17 years. We're never, ever going to get a divorce. You know that.
Well, it's interesting. As long as there's some huge elephant in the room, like alcoholism or infidelity, you always have that to focus on.
Right.
But when you start saying, maybe we should break up, and it's not because you hit me or slept with my sister or are drowning yourself in vodka, now you got an issue, because when it's maybe we should just break up, there's nothing to quit but the relationship.
Right. And that's what scared me and still scares me. It makes me believe this is absolutely coming. There's no fight. Nobody's mad at anybody at my house. I'm heartbroken at the prospect of getting a divorce, but nobody's mad at me. Nothing happened.
Well, where
so
do you stay? Where
Gretchen has asked for a divorce.
Well, here, let me read you the first email I got this morning.
Okay.
Danny. No, dear.
Right. Mm.
Here are the names and numbers for you two for two referral services. You can call for referral to family law attorneys. In addition, I offer these three individuals. I have no financial connection with any of these three. Then he leaves their names and their numbers at Beverly Hills Bar Association. You're out. You're too expensive. Glendale Bar Association. I think I might go with them. They're cheap.
Yeah.
But apparently, she went and signed papers yesterday around
noon. Who wrote
noon.
You that email?
That's from her lawyer. I called
so
him and I said,
so she has filed divorce proceedings.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Officially.
She said, this was kind of a kindness I thought of her. She goes, I didn't want you served, so they'll just come to the house. And I thought, who are you showing a kindness, me or the stranger that put something like that in my hand?
And in using your logic, and I think using almost everyone's logic, because this is not something she did in the heat of battle. This is not a big blowout. There were no booze involved.
If this was a blowout, I wouldn't be scared.
It'd be just another of the many blowouts along the long road.
It's been months of, you know, I think we'd be happier apart. I'm not happy, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, she has been friendly and helpful. She's still keeping my schedule for me and getting me places I got to go and getting me paid on time and making travel arrangements for places I got to be. And she says, and I hope she means it, that she wants to be best friends, that there's nothing about me in that case that she doesn't like. She's just not happy married to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, being married to you is a tallish order, medium to tall order, right?
Yep.
Now, there's some people, depending on how they're constructed, that like that. For instance, my old partner, Dr. Drew, very nice, very mellow guy, wife, pain in the ass. And I don't mean that in a very bad way, but she's got a lot of energy. There's a lot of maintenance. There's a lot to her.
Right.
When she comes into the room, you know about big personality, big kasha, as my deceased mother-in-law would say. It's Italian. It's like a casino. It's a big casino, big noise and buzzers and whistles going off. And whenever I would say to Drew, what the hell did you marry that shrew for? She's driving me nuts. He would say, I love it. I love the action. I love the personality.
Never boring.
I'm like, yeah, but half the time she's busting your chops.
Right.
And he's like, yeah.
A firecracker.
I like it. I like the action. I like the energy.
Like,
now, for me, I'm like a cat. I get spooked by that kind of stuff, and I'm going to go on top of the refrigerator and hide where I can't get stepped on. But if you're Drew, you like it. And if you're Danny, you like it, perhaps. But maybe Gretchen
doesn't like it.
Maybe she doesn't like the big casino.
Can I ask a question?
That's what I said, because I have been spending time out of the house. What we did is we made the house a separate domicile now.
Mm-hmm.
There are two floors up. At floor level, and that's what used to be a basement, I guess, or a crawl space, that is now 2,000 square feet and with a theater and a bar, and it's very nice. And we've changed all the locks, and there's only one way and one out.
And you live there.
I live there.
Why don't you do that sitcom thing where you put the stripe down the middle of the house?
Well, The thing is, A, my kids are there, and B, lawyers all over the place said, don't abandon the property. Stay home.
So you pick up and leave. You may never get back onto right. that property.
Well, the thing is, I don't know now what's really smart, because Gretchen and I have always had a deal, split everything 50-50, you know.
Right.
She feels that I'd have died of a drug overdose a long time ago without her. And I feel she's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have no problems with half. Here's my problem. Here's my whole problem.
Yeah.
I don't want any part of this.
You're still in love with Gretchen.
I want no divorce of any kind, anyhow, anyway.
Is there any way of fixing this with
Gretchen? I don't think so. And the only reason I say that is because she's not angry at anything. I didn't do anything. As a matter of fact, the last nasty thing done in the house was actually by her, and she doesn't do nasty stuff. But it's been less friendly and less friendly and less friendly. And she just said, when you tell a guy flat out, I am not happy being married to you. I'm not in love with you anymore.
Ooh.
I love you. I'm your best friend. I'll help take care of you. And I believe her. I wouldn't talk so highly about her if I didn't believe all these things about her. I think she'll be right there for me. I'm having throat surgery. Like, right after I got a boxing match coming up, right after the boxing match, I'm having throat surgery. I'm going to come to her house, and she's going to take care of me. I know that. You know, she's going to be there. But the weird part is...
Now, will you bring your hot 19-year-old new girlfriend?
She's 24.
I'm going to need to live vicariously through your
penis,
by the way,
Danny. Danny does not have a new girlfriend yet.
Of course I do not.
When he does. When?
But that's already a gimme with Gretchen. That was I said, when this first was leading up to like a couple months ago, maybe you should move out again, and we'll see. I said, listen, I stayed celibate for 30 days the last time you kicked me out of respect.
Hmm.
I can't do it again.
Well, she goes, 200 days for normal people.
Right.
She goes, this isn't a move-out thing. This is a you're free to go date. So there is an upside. I can now go back to having sex with strangers.
All right. So let's
But the downside is I really don't want a divorce. I love her.
Well, now, two questions. And then I'll try to put a happy spin on it. Are you broken up about it? I mean, you really want to stay in the relationship. You really want to continue the marriage. You are being realistic. I don't think you're just being a bummer or hedging your bets or managing expectation levels. It does sound like she's legitimately through with the relationship.
Yeah.
And I think you understand that. So you should be wanting to crawl inside of a bottle right now and go into some sort of shame spiral or lash out against her or the man. I mean, what's going through your mind and why are you taking it as well as you seem to be taking it?
'Cause even though I did it 5 years ago, I did it.
This is the cheating.
She didn't do anything wrong ever. You know, I want her. Part of me just says, well, if she died, that'd be nice. But she didn't do anything wrong.
I have a question about the cheating. And I don't know if we have time. Should we go to break and come back?
I'm not even sure I'm right that that's what it is. I'm just, Adam is right. I say this to people and they think it's fun. Like, remember I told you in the very beginning how much I love Gretchen, the rose petals and all that stuff. And you'd go, and I'd say, nope. There's a real dark side to that much attention.
Right.
Because I don't want to be more than 2 feet away from her. And
she
can't be far enough away from me. So it's a hassle for her. It's palatable to me because I understand it. I see her point. I can see me being, normally if you're in love with a girl and she's in love with you for 17 years and then she's not, you don't get it and now you hate her.
I mean,
I get it. Why she would not be in love with me.
That's exquisitely mature, and I don't find most people have that level of maturity. You did something wrong, which many people do in relationships, over 5 years ago. You're being punished for it now. You're taking it as if you're just taking your medicine. Most people are not nearly that mature and usually would be outraged and want to lash out or want
You're being overly kind to me.
Yes, my female intuition tells me that cheat was a very difficult one.
That was a big bad thing, but there's also... and she admits now that she never got over what she thought she had, but that's not the thing. The thing is me. I'm Dr. Drew's wife, man. If you know how you like movies where cars explode and people drive 160 miles an hour?
Yes.
I actually do that. I make stuff explode, man, on purpose. And I drive 160 miles an hour, and I've I've got steel plates in every quadrant of my body. And both legs, both arms, and I like it.
You're with Merchant Ivory.
You know? Yeah.
All right, well, listen.
She doesn't like it now. She's a grown woman with children, and she's tired. When I woke up in the hospital, and they're still putting the metal plate in my arm because I woke up demanding nicotine. I swear to God, two different doctors that have given me surgery both said, I've never seen that before. You woke up and asked for cigarettes. But I wake up, and they're doing surgery, putting the plate in my arm, and she's outside, and I can see she's screaming. Mm-hmm. And so I finally roll on and go, and she's telling me she wants a divorce and how she hates me. And I'm going, dude, half the bones of my body are broken. Why are you yelling at me? And she said, Danny, it's just more sirens. I'm so tired of you and sirens.
Well, you like rock and roll. She likes classical. You're dying to stay with someone who doesn't share the same musical interests as you. Perhaps, in a way, she's doing you a favor. Maybe you need to hang out with someone who likes rock and roll so you can both go out dancing on a Saturday night.
I'm scared of that. That's too much rock and roll.
I'd just like to point out that we'll be at Morongo, I think, Saturday.
Can I point out one thing before we go? If my math is correct, in 8 days, Danny will have a year. A day at a time, Danny will have a year clean and sober.
Yeah. This news came on Easter Sunday, and the nasty thing she did before that was some other major event in our life. She does pick interesting times. But, again, I just want to make it perfectly clear that Adam is right. She may be doing me a favor and is certainly doing her a favor. And whether it's just the affair or just living with a guy who really plays hard. There's no reason for me to have this much steel in me. You know, it's a cute story when I tell it about being shot,
exhausting.
But I made somebody mad enough to shoot me.
Well,
You know, I can be aggravating. When a girl really pulls a trigger on you, and you tell her, I gave her time to think about it. I said, if you pull that trigger, you're going to go to the jail for the rest of your life over me? And she looked at me and she said, yeah, and pulled the trigger. I can make chicks mad.
And that was his mother, by the way. Oh, so, you know.
She's forgiven me.
Adam, there's a guy on the phone crying. Can we talk to him when we come back?
Well, Rachel Harris is here from Notes from the Underbelly.
Yeah, follow that, Rachel.
She's crying, too.
Follow that, baby.
All right, I'll tell you what. We'll bring, and by the way, maybe a love connection between Danny and Rachel, because Danny.
Body's not even cold,
God,
Adam.
You know,
Danny's
so
very
funny.
Attracted to Rachel. I'll tell you, we need to take a break. We're running way behind. We'll bring Rachel in. Oh, you'll know her as soon as I describe her to you. Notes from the Underbelly. We'll bring her in. And maybe we'll all just jump in on this. Is Teresa crying, too?
I'm very upset.
Dude, I had that brief myself.
Don't cry. You know it makes me laugh.
I like it that her lawyer sent me other lawyers' phone numbers.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back to sift through the rubble of this show with wreckage. Rachel Harris next.
Back to Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci from the new ABC comedy, Notes from the Underbelly.
Why do you come to these things?
Because the booze is free and I'm dying to see someone I work with make a total ass of themselves.
Isn't that usually you?
Luckily, I never remember.
Rachel Harris is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, Rachel Harris is one of these people. Well, it can be broken up into two segments of society. There is bald, possibly gay Brian, who runs the sound effects, who, when I said Rachel Harris is coming in tomorrow, he went, that is exciting because I'm a huge fan of hers. And then there is Danny Bonaducci, who said, who's Rachel Harris? And then when he saw Rachel Harris, he said, oh, that's Rachel Harris. I love her.
Yes. You are one of the few things, if you don't mind the expression, instead of people, but it's just in life itself, that Gretchen and I agree upon. It's like, we both go, oh, she's so funny, that girl, and everything else, I'm just an ass. But we both agree on you.
No, but some people know who you are if they can't picture you. You're from VH1's Best Week Ever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the hot blonde funny chick with the glasses, who was also in Kicking and Screaming.
And, you've seen her all over the place. I've seen her in commercials and Fat Actress.
I did a lot of glamour working for your consideration.
Yes.
Now, Notes from the Underbelly, Thursdays, 10 o'clock, ABC. First episode this Thursday. But it must be nice, as I was saying to Brian, who, by the way, admitted he'd pleasured himself to you.
You did?
I wish you weren't a liar.
The T-Mobile commercials or what?
I just wish you weren't a liar.
It's that high.
I said to him straight out, I said, have you pleasured yourself to Rachel Harris?
He did not.
He can't hit enough buttons right now to show you up.
He was either hanging his head or holding his t-shirt up with his chin. Either way, his head was down. And
can we move forward?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, he did.
He made a withdrawal from the spank bank.
One of the things I like about Rachel.
Shut your mouth, dirty lawyer.
Almost everything.
He looks actually mad.
Her comments. They had Rachel make comments about me and Breaking Bonaducci.
Best week ever. Do you have it?
Yeah. No, I don't have it. I don't do that kind of stuff. Like,
did you say I said it was fantastic.
After calling me a dangerous lunatic.
No. I would never use the word dangerous lunatic.
Right. I don't think so. Redundant?
No.
Because if you do say it again, I'll set you on fire.
Okay? Please. It wouldn't be the first time, Danny.
By the way, Danny, I know it's been a long time, but this isn't how flirting works.
I'll set you on fire? That doesn't work with the chicks?
No, it does with me. I like the high drama.
Immolation is hot.
I'm sort of like a reformed Gretchen,
well,
I think.
Rachel, as I walked in the green room.
I love you, Gretchen. I'm sorry I said that. But
well,
keep going.
I walked into the green room a few moments ago, and I said, well, you heard what just went on, and I don't know how we're going to move past that and talk about sitcoms for the next 10 minutes. So I said we will plug the bejesus out of the new sitcom.
Yes. Which I've seen, by the way. I saw the pilot, and it's excellent.
Oh, thank you, Tessa.
But you're a woman. You're in a relationship, or you've been in relationships. You're married right now.
I am married.
Sorry, bye-bye. But that's not going to stop you this afternoon. And you have insights on this,
yeah,
on Danny. You do. So you followed the... Well, anyone who saw Breaking Bonaducci, and that's all of us, feel like we're part of this relationship.
Yeah. No, and I feel like with your show, you know, it was so brave, by the way, you know, to be completely honest. And I've heard you speak before on... Like CNBC and different things about addiction. And I just think it's very noble, Danny. But, you know, the thing about being in a relationship with an addict is that if, you know, I don't know what your wife's doing, you know, as far as her own therapy and all that kind of stuff. But I know
she bakes.
Okay. Is she awake and bake?
She bakes.
Cookies and muffins.
Okay.
You're asking, does she go to Al-Anon?
Not Pat Riley.
That's what Rachel's asking.
No, she doesn't do any of that stuff.
Well, the thing then, you know, for me, I just, from my experience, is that you can be kind of addicted to the drama. And until you sort of get your own thing going on, all your focus is on the addict, right? And then once the addict gets sober, you're kind of left sitting there thinking, well, what am I supposed to do now?
Right.
And I'm not saying I don't know your situation. I don't know Gretchen. But I just know with other people that have been in that situation that a lot of times that's what happens. And it's like once you – it's sort of that thing where it's like you take the glass – you know, you stop pointing the finger at the other person and then – you kind of have to point the finger at yourself and look at what your part is in this relationship.
Project complete.
Call me Dr. Rage.
In a certain way.
No, that's actually, it says that in many a textbook and many accounts.
What if you started drinking again? What do you think her reaction would be?
You know what? I talked to Teresa. Teresa and I are actually like kind of pals and really talk to each other.
Hold on. Who's Teresa?
I know.
I do the news.
I called her last night. And I said, I just can't continue to screw up and win at it. I have fallen uphill for so long. Mm-hmm. I was one time taken out of a radio station that I was broadcasting in handcuffs and bailed out by our competition and given a raise. Mm-hmm. I fall uphill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done with it.
Like, so you fail up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the drama. You made a career out of all this drama.
Yeah, I'm 47 years old. I'm broken to pieces.
But you know,
I'm not doing it anymore.
But that's the thing is, if she does feel like if you did drink again, it's sort of like, I love that you're drinking a monster drink right now. Like, it's like, Like the last person you would expect to be drinking like a monster soda would be you, Danny.
We find a little caffeine helps him out of a shell.
Well,
God,
it's the only thing that gets that Benzedrine taste out of my throat.
Can I ask Rachel a question?
Yeah. Yes.
Have you ever been cheated on, and do you think you could forgive the person eventually if you love them?
I have never been cheated on. I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I've never cheated. Well, when I was in high school, actually, I was sort of dating a guy, but not really. And then I took another guy to like the Sadie Hawkins dance. That was bad form.
It was 1955.
Thank you. It was 1932.
The man was one of the Crickets, Buddy Holly's backup band.
That sock cop was ruined.
It was bad. So I can really relate to it, Danny, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you're very kind.
So the question.
Well, do you think you could forgive somebody for cheating on you? If your husband, you're married.
From Gretchen's point of view, yes. I do know people that have have looked at that relationship and, you know, when somebody has cheated on them, and it takes a lot of work, but I do think it's, you can do it. Well, and I think it's sort of like when you break a bone, you know, it comes back together when it heals. It's, you know, it gets even stronger. I'm just full of good.
She doesn't want to do it. That's the thing. Anyone can forgive anyone anything if you want to do it. I want to make sure that's clear.
This is not about anything but being done. If I had an affair and she wanted to leave, she should have left 5 years ago.
Right.
If she wanted to leave because I'm a drug, she should have left 360 days ago.
Yes. If you catch an employee stealing and you love that employee and that employee is valuable and you want to keep that employee, then you look the other way. You suspend them for a week and then they come back to work. But if you were looking for a reason to fire them, then you say you can't forgive it. And they're fired. Right. This is the worst kind of breakup. It's over nothing.
Yeah.
But it's also the best kind of breakup. Because otherwise, I have not reformed enough that I wouldn't be angry.
Well, right?
And bad things happen when I'm angry.
Oh, so you feel like you've had enough like rehab and enough healing so that you're not like totally angry and going to act out over this.
No, I'm not going to be a minute late for work or go unkempt.
But you know, the thing I have to say is that even if she is done, it's sort of like, you know, the person that's supposed to be with you is going to get you. And it's like, why not, you know, if it's time to go, she can, it's like you're not serving each other at all. Like she can go and be with the person that really makes her happy. And you could have another huge Danny Bonaduce love affair with a hot chick.
When will that start?
Awesome.
Like, when will you be ready to date again, honestly?
Maybe you need some alone time, though.
My wife is listening. Yes.
We are getting a divorce and can get ugly.
Gretchen, I love you. I'm sorry if I'm saying
too. Let me just say this right now, because here's what Gretchen knows about me. Gretchen one time asked me very seriously, if she died, would I ever marry again? And I said, baby, I would bring a date to your funeral. I've never been alone ever.
Well, that's something that maybe... Danny just needs to take a long dip in Lake Danny.
Hey, Danny, not a chance. I'll be taking a dip in Lake Debbie in like an hour and a half.
Lake Danielle.
I'm going to be honest with you. I love my wife, and I don't want a divorce. I'm in love with my wife and my wife only. But I'll be boning somebody later this afternoon.
His name is Jack Silver.
I don't even know who she is, but my guess is she'll be at Starbucks or the coffee bean.
Now, Danny, I hate to take a turn for the morose here, but what about young
Dante.
Count Baron Dante
and Isabella.
Nathaniel.
Dante, Jean-Michel, Valentino, Bonaducci.
Right. What about the kids? Well, how does that work? Have you broached this with them?
Yeah, we broached with Isabella. Who's
12?
Yeah. Went crazy for about an hour and a half. And was just chilling with her mom. She called her mom every name in the book.
She was angry at Gretchen. Does she have a friend whose parents aren't divorced, I guess, in this day and age, growing up in this town?
The person that she is, her, one of her best friends that is dating Fabio,
single mom, by the way. Fabio, he's a huge man, but let's be honest, he sounds to me like he's got a very small little doodle.
Does he? You know the girl is dating him.
I've never asked about Fabio's doodle.
I'm sorry. I know I went there.
Sounds like a snack food.
Fabio's doodle.
Yes. I'd like some doodles.
All right. Keep going. I'm sorry.
I totally broke the kids.
Yes, the kids.
Well, this is like so not me to be saying this kind of stuff because I usually just do my job no matter what. Mm-hmm. But I feel obligated because I've always loved this woman because of her character and its juxtaposition to my lack thereof. Mm-hmm. So it shines, you know, where I will lie to save myself a dime.
Right.
She wouldn't lie to save herself torture.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's this. So I've always admired her. She's like Mount Rushmore to me. It's like, oh my God, a monument to good and truth.
Right.
So the kids are in no trouble at all in the sense that they're going to be raised by the best human being ever. I have will have liberal visitation rights. I will get a 2 or 3 bedroom home so they can come stay with me. And, I just got this letter from this lawyer when I opened my email at work, man.
Wow.
I don't have a lot of plans.
We need to take a break. Rachel Harris is here. Notes from the Underbelly. Thursday's 10 o'clock, ABC. Rachel, can you hang out for another break? Because we have another big announcement to make on the show involving another celebrity when we come back. But I also don't feel like we put this to bed yet.
When we come back...
I can't tell you the number of couples I've known that have decided to get a divorce and said, but we're friends, and let's keep it cool. And then the suits get involved, and they start whispering in people's ears.
That's what Gus and I talk about all the time.
It destroys it. As a matter of fact, if that's happened to you, you can give us a buzz at 866-901-ADAM. But there's a lot of couples I know that just want to do what's fair and what's best for the kids and go their separate ways. And then some guy starts nibbling on their ear and saying, you know, you deserve half.
You stuck with, I have one word for you.
Okay,
Marty Singer.
When we come back, I will, because we're going to do things nicely, right?
Yes.
When we come back, I will tell you what I told her if she crosses me this much.
Oh, dear.
What I'll do.
This is going to be good. And another big announcement and another big celebrity. Oh, 4 hours. Not enough show for us today. We'll be back on the Adam Carolla Show.
Joy, joy. Hey, Ren, I'm listening to Adam Carolla, and I'm learning everything about comedy. Joy. You shut up, you fat, bloated pig. Yes, I shall kill you.
Well, Rachel Harris here. Notes from the Underbelly. Thursdays, 10 o'clock, ABC. First season, first episode coming up this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, you know, from Best Week Ever. I love the 80s, the commercials, the played Christy Alley's a hairstylist and a fat actress. You just
work all
you just
the time.
Work and you just know her. And she is cuter in person, I might add. And one of the few hot blondes you can feel good about.
She's the thinking man's bombshell.
Yeah.
See that part? That's the only part that scares me.
And bald Brian was thinking about her about 12 hours ago, standing over a toilet. Yeah. Brian, you told me straight out.
You had that T-Mobile commercial on a loop.
Yes.
That is so awkward.
It is awkward, isn't it? But the ultimate tip of the cap, yes?
Wait a second.
Yes.
It's awkward that he did it, or it's an awkward thing to have to try and
do? No, it's awkward that he's getting off. That he's getting off on my T-Mobile commercial.
A little bit flattering.
Ronnie Briskman. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She, I mean, that is a troubled
gal. Please try your call again later.
Well, we'll get back to Danny's divorce in 1 second. But when you hear, in literally just a second. All right, it's time to talk about it again.
I know. No, I can't stop.
As a woman, when you hear that a man pleasured himself to you, and if you're attractive and you're on TV enough, it's bound to happen, ladies.
Come on!
Teresa, I'm sure you're in Brian Spank Bank. As well.
She's totally in the wheelhouse.
How dare you!
If that's the name of his bathroom, so be it. The point is
he is
when you find this out, are you disgusted by it? Or does it depend who the guy is? Or ultimately, do you go, hey, I'm attractive to men?
You're all going to need to shut up!
I would say I'm flattered.
I'm flattered.
But what if Brian?
I'll do it right now.
What if Brian was a scary, disgusting pig of a man?
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
That's even hotter to me. If he's like if he's like in Grindhouse. Did you see Grindhouse? Like a gaping wound of a guy that's losing his penis over you.
All right,
is really
even better.
Top drawer for me. Like that it doesn't get any better.
God, I love you. I think I'm in love with you.
Well.
The critics are in love with Rachel Harris,
right
too,
guy.
I should say, Adam.
Just to, yes, hold on. There's a dream catcher of activity above my head.
You're like an AM radio that someone shoved in my head and I can't turn off.
First, let me say, Jimmy Kimmel was going to come on and announce something that was very big.
Oh.
We have decided, because of the nature of this story, to put that off until tomorrow. Right. So those of you who are listening tomorrow and will hear that. We're going to continue the Bonaducci divorce proceedings.
Tomorrow,
now you must, who doesn't? Now you must, but if he could only learn to love himself. Now, Teresa, you are going to... share some kind words about Rachel Harris.
Yes, her new show, Notes from the Underbelly. The star is the girl from Kissing Jessica Stein, Jennifer Westfeld.
Yeah,
Very sweet girl and talented. But Rachel is stealing all of the great reviews. People Magazine says that she's seen stealing, and she's gotten some great reviews elsewhere. And
well, I know actresses. Jennifer will never hold that against you.
No, she won't. She's a great gal.
Enjoy.
Yes.
Believe you me.
I just shot a movie with her partner from Kissing Jessica Stein, and I've heard nothing but glowing reviews about her and her sweet personality. Enjoy.
I happen to love Jennifer.
You love her now.
I love Melanie Paxton, Peter Cambor, and
You're not accepting an award, dude.
Yeah.
So.
Now,
remember, if you want to say anything bad about someone and you're in show business and you don't want to say anything bad about anyone, all you have to do is say her name twice. And here's how it works. Danny, salt of the earth, open and honest. You saw him on Breaking Bonaducci,
yes.
but a loving school child outside of that show. What a guy. Teresa Strasser, nobody better at her job, but even better off the microphone. Rachel Harris, Rachel's Rachel. just say the name two times.
I see that.
That's what you're going to be saying.
I'm not saying that. I love Jennifer. She's fantastic to work with.
I hope she doesn't get Entertainment Weekly when it says that you, Rachel Harris, provide a needed blast of acid.
Acid.
Nice. Yes. You all know how often that's needed.
All right, speaking of blast of acid, you told your soon-to-be ex-wife, Gretchen, that you would do what things got ugly in the divorce proceedings. And I rarely, and I just want to preface what Danny's going to say by saying we may be kindred spirits here. I think of myself as very even-keeled and very level-headed. If my wife decided it was time for us to get a divorce and she then decided I had to move out of the house, and this went from, hey, man, everything's cool, we're going to have shared custody of the kids and we'll both live at the house or I'll get an apartment or whatever, and then some
guy got
attorney started whispering in her ear, and the next thing you know, I'm living over at the Lakewood apartments,
Oakwood,
starting a fire in the back of the Oakwood apartments,
and I
can't see my kid without a court-appointed whatever.
Wow.
I would want to have a drifter kill her.
Right.
I really would, and I'm a sensible guy, but if it ever got down to that point where I had to sign over half my paycheck to her for perpetuity, and I was living in the Oakwoods and couldn't see my kids, I would want her killed.
Yeah.
Now, I should want the lawyer killed, but I would want to take her down, too. That would be the one thing that would drive me literally insane.
Here's the first thing you got to know about killing people. You don't tell the lawyer you're going to kill him.
Don't announce it on the radio.
No, that's you can announce you're going to kill certain people and just be on a stage in front of 3,000 people when they die in another city. You're all right.
But what did you say to Gretchen?
What I said to Gretchen, and I apologize wholeheartedly, but she said something I didn't care for, and I'm worried about lawyers in her ear because we've had this deal. Things have been rocky for years in our marriage, and we've had people type it up, and we thought we didn't need two lawyers. Why pay two lawyers?
Right.
We'll split everything, blah, 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 blah. And then the lawyer says, you know, this isn't good unless you both have a lawyer. So your lawyer needs to tell me this. And Gretchen or I was like, I don't need one. I trust you. So that's been a big thing. And Gretchen does not lie, ever. And I've built my life on that. I've built my life on trust with Gretchen. And unfortunately, she cannot do the same with me. Like, I cannot say enough kind things about her. And when you hear what I said to her last night, you are going to hate me. But you have to understand, I jumped. I took it back. I apologized. I said, I would never. But this is what came out of my mouth. She said, I have band practice tomorrow night. I have some band.
Mm-hmm.
And will you watch the kids? And I said, nope. Didn't even turn around. I said, nope. I said, well, what do you mean, no? I said, no, I won't watch the kids while you go sing in a band. I won't hire a babysitter. And then she said, I have to list what kind of father do I think you'll be watching the children on a list, Danny.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, wait, where's that coming? That comes from a lawyer. That comes from someone in there.
Right. Someone told her she had to make a list.
Yeah, how I'll be and how much visitation. So I looked at him and I said, play with me this much.
Oh, dear. He's staring at me, by the way, everybody. He's looking right at Rachel Harris.
I've got wood.
Okay.
Not to mention what Brian's got.
Play with me.
Yes.
This much. I will hire the most expensive lawyer in the world.
Marty,
I will tell him to drag this out forever till we are penniless. Then I will show up naked and drunk at work. And then I'll go to jail. And I'll watch you and your children starve in the street. If you play with me this much.
I like that.
I like that, too.
I think that was bad.
I'm sure she's not going to get a copy of that tape.
How did she react to that?
She said, I believe you.
Yeah.
Well,
she did.
It really, like I said, it's weird to say.
Good time.
Most divorces start with the best of intentions. Well, but everyone, it's like any... That's like any endeavor. You start a band and, hey, we're going to split up the money, equal shares, and everyone's going to get a creative vote, blah, blah, blah. And the next thing you know, there's six guys trying to kill each other on an airplane.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I have made that analogy to her. Do you know the Bay City? Two of the Bay City Rollers lived in the street when they were being offered a big deal to reunite, and they wouldn't do it because they hated each other.
Yeah. But can I say this? I've seen Danny and Gretchen with their kids, and I don't know them that well, but from what I've seen, they truly love their kids, and they have great kids.
We truly love each other.
And there's no way for all you folks that think you're going to leave the kids out of it. Kids are sponges. They pick up vibes. They pick up feelings. Yeah. They understand what's going on. You don't have to verbalize it to them. I have 9-month-old twins. They know when I'm in a good mood and when I'm in a bad mood. I came home yesterday screaming about some remodel thing that was driving me nuts, and both kids were looking at me from their high chairs with their mouths hanging open because spitting out in the kitchen, arms flailing on. All they heard was, and I tell you, if you don't listen to me, you gotta listen. But nobody listens. And all of a sudden, the kids are knocking stuff out. All of a sudden, the kids look like they're gonna cry because they don't understand the words. Right. They get upset.
And they don't understand that it's not about them. They can't separate.
No, we did our best effort.
Go ahead.
Yes, I was gonna say, everyone starts that way. And later on, when daddy and mommy want each other to die horrible deaths, the kids pick up on that no matter what kind of face they put on in front of the children. Now, when my parents got divorced, and is everyone's parents here?
Yes, mine.
Yes.
I think we're all in the club.
Freak out!
My parents don't want to
be
in the club.
Oh my God.
My family had nothing to split up. They did have one piece of property. It was a thing of Top Ramen noodles. My dad snapped it in half.
Did you get a season packet?
They split up the season packet. My dad got half the noodles. My mom got the other, and I got that stuff that breaks off in the bottom of the package or dumped it in my mouth. My dad is such a colossal loser that at the age of 40, when he got divorced, he couldn't afford a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. He went to his in-laws' house, to my mother's parents' one-bedroom in North Hollywood, and hung out there for 2 months until they finally told me he had to pick up and go get his own crappy apartment. There was literally nothing to divide. They had no property.
And your mother divorced him. That is shocking.
I hope you're not listening.
From all that.
The Corollas don't have a relationship like you and I do, Mom.
I hate to break in, but we are making news as TMZ.com is on the line. And they want to confirm whether or not this is true.
All right. I love TMZ.
Me too.
Jillian?
I use them daily.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Jillian.
What's happening?
I didn't know you were going to put me on the air.
Well, good enough.
What did you think happened when you called?
Well, I know.
Are you single, Jillian? Because Danny's available.
Oh, dear. So, Danny, it is true?
What is true?
Are you and Gretchen divorcing?
Here's how it appears to me, according to this letter. Gretchen has signed a piece of paper that has started the process of getting the ball rolling of getting a divorce. Now, I have to receive my papers, sign them and not contest it, hire a lawyer, and say, okay, and then we're getting a divorce. Right now, she has signed a paper that says, I will be getting served divorce papers within the next 30 days.
Can you run with that, Jillian?
I can.
Oh, sad, though.
I'm sorry, Danny.
Okay.
This is not a hoax, by the way, Jillian.
Well, that's why I'm calling you to confirm rather than just putting it on the website.
Yeah. Right. Okay, wait. Just because she's talking to me doesn't mean it's not a hoax. She's leaving me because my penis is way too large.
There you go.
She can't bear the girth.
There's chafing and discomfort.
I have to wash my eyes out with bleach.
But there is a possibility of reconciliation.
I would certainly hope so. And as I said, because, you know, sometimes my job slips in here, and hopefully from now on I'll be able to say whatever I want, and Gretchen will know this is my job. This is how he feeds us. He's got to get back to being funny. The truth of the matter is, yes, this is happening. And if you want the ugly, sad first time you'll ever hear me be a puss, I don't want it. I don't want a divorce. This sucks ass.
Jillian, let me ask you this. Isn't it true that Chris Rock and his wife filed and then they rescinded their filing of divorce?
TMZ reported in November we had a very good source who had confirmed that there was filings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here, let me help you here, Teresa.
I'm saying this isn't permanent.
Chris Rock is black and funny. I have nothing in common with this man.
I'm saying is,
red and amusing.
His marriage was on the rocks, and then he fixed it.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I was on the rocks, and that pissed her off.
Yeah, but she's married to Chris Rock. No offense, but here's my point.
I'm trying to
help
out.
He's black and funny. No, my point is, and Jillian, I don't know if you guys want to weave this in your article, but if this was we were speaking, and I don't know if you've been listening.
Oh, by the way, the naked drunk and going to jail part, that was a joke.
Yes, if this was over an incident, I could see her possibly cooling down. Right. This is not over an incident.
Right. And by the way, Jillian, for your article, Danny will have been sober a year on the 18th.
Mm-hmm. Oh, congratulations.
That is thanks. Fantastic.
And one for day. Your article, it's C-A-R-O-L-L-A. That's Adam Carolla Morning. All right,
97.1.
Jillian.
Thank you guys so much.
Right away, baby doll.
Thanks, Jillian.
I'm working on it. Send me the MP3 so I can put it up on the site.
Oh, yes. We'll do.
Look at that. That's how we
Rachel
roll.
Harris, notes from the Underbelly. 10
do
o'clock
it.
And 30.
You've got my email. You guys okay.
By the way, you got any dirt on Rachel Harris or Jennifer
could
Westfeld?
Rat bastards capitalize on my heartache just a little bit more, please?
We're trying.
Hang in there, Danny.
Biggest laugh of the day. All right, Rachel Harris, notes from the Underbelly. We need to take ourselves.
I'm telling you right now, if I'm not getting somebody by 3:30 this afternoon, this wasn't worth it.
No.
A break. Bald Brian needs a little quality time in the men's room. I hope we respect his privacy.
Brian.
Notes from the Underbelly, Thursdays, 10 o'clock, ABC, first episode. Find out what everyone's talking about this Thursday. Rachel. You're welcome back anytime
Thank
you like.
You,
thanks
Adam.
For being a great sport. We'll
I
take a break. Forget about the tease. We'll do the news when you come back.
Bald and gay. Brian's bald and gay. Does his sound effects for very little pay? We super geek, a hairless head, no girls in his bed, bald and gay, Brian's bald and gay.
That's satisfying.
I'm surrounded by assholes.
On every level, very humiliating. Did you think I wasn't going to bring up you spanking off to Rachel Harris?
Clearly a joke.
Clearly. Well, I'll say I'm now in love with Rachel
Harris.
Forward? I think we're all in love with her.
I really like her.
We all are. Yes.
You know who else I like? Scott Foster. He's the lawyer that just called me and said I'm a big fan of the show. I'll take care of you. My new buddy, Scott.
All right. Well, there you go. Law offices of Foster.
The guy that thinks fast enough quick, call the radio station. That's my new lawyer.
Sure. Hey, T.
Yes.
The news, baby girl.
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
Don Imus and a lot of hot water. Some remarks he made about the Rutgers women's basketball team. This, of course, is making news everywhere. It's apparently a slow news day. Here is NBC News anchor Brian Williams announcing NBC's decision on how to handle the Don Imus situation.
Good evening. Tonight, NBC News has announced radio host Don Imus, whose national morning show is simulcast on our cable network, MSNBC, is being suspended. He will not be seen on MSNBC for 2 weeks beginning Monday because of comments he made last week.
Wow.
Great.
Yes.
I said earlier, I don't know how I'm going to get through my morning anymore not seeing a mailbox post with a cowboy hat on it leaned up against a microphone for 4 hours talking about nothing. And another
thing. And not even doing it well.
First off, is there officially nothing to talk about in the news?
Slow
really?
News day.
Yes.
Well,
a morning show jock is supposed to, who gets paid $20 million a year to say provocative things that outrage people and titillate people, says something that's marginally outrageous, marginally for him. And it's news 24/7. And here's the other reason it's news. Because all the white people have to pretend it's a big deal. Otherwise, you'll think we're racist.
Right.
So we have to go, oh, my goodness. And if any of those newscasters had any huevos at all and said, I don't see what the big deal is. I mean, I don't condone it. I don't agree with him. But he's a morning show jock. He's supposed to say stuff like this.
Right. What he said was he referred to the basketball players as nappy-headed hoes. He said he was sorry. He said he was sorry on his show. He said he was sorry on Al Sharpton's show. He's making an apology tour of America.
He said he was sorry to be on Al Sharpton's show.
Which I believe he was. And then this morning at a press conference, a woman named C. Vivian Stringer told a audience of national news people what she felt. She is the coach of the Rutgers women's basketball team.
They came back to this. We have all been physically, mentally, and emotionally spent, so hurt by the remarks that were uttered by Mr. Imus. But you see, we also understood a long time ago that, you know what, no one can make you feel inferior unless you allow them.
Mm-hmm. Wow, she went to the Maya Angelou School of Speech Pattern.
Yeah.
Totally.
Hey, Adam. It's good to be here. I'd like to take you out for an imported beer.
Was that Esther Roll or was that...
Yeah. That was Maya Angelou.
Oh, all right. Well, I got the C part right. The thing about it is first off, everyone on the Rutgers basketball team had to be told who Don Imus was
right
before they were offended.
Right. A lot of Googling going on in the dorm.
I'm sure of it. Look, I'm not defending racism. I'm defending free speech and no news.
Right.
This is worth a mention, and it's worth a slap in the hand, but it's not news
to have
some scarecrow make a semi-racist remark.
I disagree that there's no news. I recently read in TMZ, B-list celebrity getting a divorce. I think it's all over the country.
Yes, it is on TMZ.com. Well, here's some news out of South Dakota. Mm-hmm. Now, it's still a big deal when women get put on death row. It doesn't happen very often. It's usually controversial.
It should happen more often!
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Okay. Now, here's what's happening in South Dakota. The first woman could be sent to the death chamber there, and it could very well be a 43-year-old named Daphne Wright of Sioux Falls. She's accused of kidnapping and murdering a 42-year-old. Now, here's the thing. This woman is deaf. She's a lesbian, and she's also black.
There's got to be a great joke here. And I am making it.
And the woman she killed, kidnapped and killed, accused of kidnapping and killing, was also deaf, but was white and heterosexual. And she thought that this woman was spending too much time with her girlfriend. So she killed her. She dismembered the body with a chainsaw. And now she is on a trial.
Can you imagine that fight before they actually died out of
the two deaf chicks going
out? I have your mind, kingdom, and my government. I won't have it. Oh, no. Don't you find the mirror, man.
Well, South Dakota has not executed a prisoner in more than 60 years.
Well,
so if their first one was this deaf...
Lesbo.
Yes, it would be... Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I would like to say I'd like to stand up for the lesbian community right now, but deaf people can bite me because they can't listen.
Well, here's the thing: you want equality, everybody. Whatever your ethnicity is, whatever your handicap is, whatever your sexual proclivities are, you want to integrate fully into society. Let us kill you. You're one of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, we're not going to treat deaf people any differently than we treat the non-hearing impaired. Get in the chair, baby. Oh, let me sign that. Yes, Fry. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That's the ultimate equality.
I wonder if she was signed her Miranda rights when she was arrested. She had to have been, right?
No.
Maybe she read the lips.
See them.
They show you a piece of paper with the Miranda on it. They don't just
Which, by the way, is tricky now. You don't necessarily even have to be read your Miranda rights anymore.
Well, listen, I think we need a happy story, and here's one: a 102-year-old woman named Elsie of Chico, California. It's about 170 miles north of San Francisco. She became the oldest golfer ever to make a hole-in-one on a regulation course. And she initially thought she might have lost her ball on the par three. But in fact, she hit the hole-in-one. And here she is, Elsie McLean of Chico.
I said, oh, my Lord, it can't be true. It can't be true. I was so excited. And the girls were just absolutely overcome.
When she says girls, she means the 86-year-olds that were with her.
Yeah, the kids.
This is why golf is officially not a sport. A 102-year-old woman did something that many professionals never do in an entire career. Now, you find me another sport, whether it's dunking a basketball or hitting a grand slam or whatever it is, you find me another sport where a 103-year-old or 102-year-old woman does it, yet you've been a professional for 30 years and have never achieved it.
Well,
I'm with you on that.
I will close with this from the U.S. Census Bureau. Very interesting statistic just out. Stay-at-home dads are up. The number of stay-at-home dads is up more than 300% from 1996. Back then, there were only about 49,000. Now there are 159,000 stay-at-home dads in the U.S. Why? Well, experts say there's less of a stigma about a man staying home with the kids while his wife works. And also, women are closing the wage gap, so in some cases it makes sense for the woman to go out and earn the money while the man stays home.
It is my dream to be I formed a group called SAD. It's stay at home. And they just kind of silent. But we call it SAD. SAD didn't work as well. Plus, it was confusing to those who actually rolled it out on lawns. Yeah. It is my dream to be a stay-at-home dad. I would love. Actually, you know, I think the dream of everyone in life is to alternate.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't think anyone wants to stay at home for 5 years. On the other hand, no one wants to get up at 5 a.m. for 5 years. I'd like to do one day on, one day off. That's all you want out of life. It's the same thing. Like everyone who works in an office wants to take their shirt off and get up on a roof and catch some sun and work it. But all the guys who are up on the roof, they want to sit in a chair and have a telephone in a Sparklets bottle up the hall. If everyone could just do one day on and one day off of everything, it would never be a grind and we all wouldn't want to die.
Remember Richard Blade?
Mm-hmm, sure.
He at not the height of his career, but still doing fairly well. Just said, that's it. I'm moving to Martinique.
He's a DJ.
Was at K-Rock with you years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
At pretty much the height of his career, pretty still famous, making some dough, just said, nope, not for me. I'm going to actually St. Martin, and I'm going to open up a dive shop, and that's what I'm going to do. And that's kind of my dream. And I went, and it was an enemy camp to go to a K-Rock party for me. I was at that top 40 station with all these punk rockers at a K-Rock party making fun of me and stuff. But I just wanted to say good job, well done, that you're following your dream. He was back 2 years later.
He's like, now on the station you were on.
Yes, he is. But he was my idol for having done it and having seen it. I said, that never really works, does it? If you're too young to go, you're too young to go. It's a dream as long as it's a dream, I think.
Right. Well, let's keep it alive in the hearts and minds of America.
I'm Teresa Strasser. That's the news.
Teresa Strasser with the real news. You, CNN.
Well, I'm now interested in hearing from you people. Seems how every single person in this room's parents got divorced. I'm sure we have a couple of listeners that have experienced it. I would love to hear the tales of woe, whether it involves your divorce or your own parents' divorce. My parents had some issues after they got divorced. I will tell you some of those issues and some of those details, which now looking back on it is very bizarre. At the time, I just thought, well, that's how all divorces go. But no, Danny can weigh in, T can weigh in. But we want you to weigh in. 866-901-ADAM. Give us your stories of divorce. This is on the tales of the bombshell that was dropped by Danny Bonaducci, and it's all
actually
over
the bombshell
TMZ.
That was dropped on Danny Bonaducci, where he's just sitting here minding his own friggin' business, doing his own friggin' job, so he drops a friggin' bomb on me.
Right. We'll take a quick break. No, you can continue dropping those bombs on Bonaducci next on the Adam Carolla Show.
It's the Adam Carolla Show, and now Cancer Danny sings the hits.
They crawled in, they hated, patrolling, they tried to catch me, riding dirty, catching me, riding dirty, trying to catch me, riding dirty, trying to catch me, riding dirty, trying to catch me, riding dirty.
That's Cancer Danny doing Chameleonaire's Riding Dirty on the Adam Carolla Show.
You know, Silver told us to keep it current. You know, done and done.
I got to tell you, that actually occurred to me.
What?
Well, I don't like to not be in love. I'm a big fan of love and romance. So I was thinking about, you know, if the facts are what they appear to be, there will be a new woman. And I realized I cough for about 10 minutes in the morning. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be less attractive because there's things involved, things rolling around.
Phlegm.
Yes.
Randy Mustard. Yeah, that guy. You wake up to that guy. Plus, my alarm goes off at 3:30.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 47. I cough, and my alarm goes off at 3:30. I'm not the catch I once was.
I think you are.
I think what you're going to get is maybe not the conventional catch people. I mean, there's two types of women out there. And this is what I'm going to tell my kid. I'm going to tell my young son, Sonny, when you're out there trying to make your way in the world.
Why don't you tell your young nephew, Danny?
And get laid.
Get me out of this.
Once visitation is established for the Corollas, when I see him every second weekend, I will say to Sonny, look, what you don't want is the land in the middle. If you're going to go a direction, you'll get that whole crew. You may go goth, you may go rockabilly, you may go punk, you may go whatever. Whatever that is, there'll be plenty of women within that culture, within that pond to fish from. See, Bonaducci, for a lot of women, the coughing, the 3:30 a.m. and all the lifestyle may not be it, but there's plenty of women that would love to save you, that would love to pick up those pieces. I mean, I'm sure there are women that have watched Breaking Bonaducci and thought, oh,
I could fix him.
I could fix
him. I'm saying get on your best bedazzled pants and get yourself to an Al-Anon women's meeting.
If I were to hit my MySpace right now, if I were to turn it on right now,
yeah.
I am telling you there would be 200 letters of people that say something like, you don't have to be alone, I've always liked you, blah, 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 blah. And then there'd be the other 200 saying you're a dirty piece of crap and it's about time she left you. And then there's the 200 that will be to her saying, God, you're always so hot. So yeah, anybody who doesn't want to be alone won't be alone all day.
Here's
I love you, MySpace.
Another tale of divorce woe. Ryan?
Yo.
What is your story?
Basically, my dad was a cop for like 25 years, and my mom couldn't take it anymore, so she finally like said, you know, kind of like I guess what Bonaducci's wife did, filled out the papers or whatever, and told him, and then he started telling all of us that he had girlfriends, and he was just, you know, some big badass whatever, and shoots himself in the mouth, and so I think divorces are bad.
Yeah, well, when dad blows his own head off, and we got beat out there because an F-bomb was dropped,
but basically you got the idea. This guy got a divorce, he was pretending to be a big player so he didn't act sad, and then blew his brains out.
Ryan, how old were you when your dad shot himself in the head?
21.
How are you about it now?
I'm cool. It drove me to heroin for a little bit, but, you know, I'm out of that now, so I'm fine.
I was just so you know the way my mind works, that did occur to me, but not because I'm so sad I can't live. I just thought it'd be the meanest thing I could do.
Kill yourself.
Yeah.
Leave a letter and or a videotape placing blame.
We don't need a videotape. We got the Partridge Family. We know what you look like.
I understand that instinct.
You know, the thing that always happens with cops, so cops have such a high incidence of suicide, and everyone wants to know what's up with their job and how stressful their job is. It's not that. I walked around with a .44 strapped to my hip, I would kill myself three times a day.
Right.
I would get into an argument with somebody. I would get a ticket from a chicken-ass ticket from a meter maid. I would get in a blowout. If I had a gun that my right hand just rested on, like you do on your belt loop when you're talking, I would kill myself three to four times a day. This is why cops kill themselves. Not the depression, not the whatever. They have a gun. They walk around with a gun all the time. Imagine what you would do to yourself or other people if you constantly had your hand on the trigger of a gun that was strapped to your hip.
I should never be armed.
That's right.
There's another death. On the Aaron.
Aaron, line three from Portland. Aaron?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up, my brother? What happened?
Well, what happened, my mom's dad passed away, and we moved down to take care of her mom, and my dad quit his $300,000 a year telecommunications job and opened up his own store, and the store ended up failing. My mom cheated on him, and they ended up getting separated. And told me and my sister about it right at the first of the year in 96. And then we went up to see him on spring break in 96. And 3 days after we got back, he passed away from a heart attack at 40. And she basically got everything, got remarried a year later.
And do you resent her? I mean, he died of natural causes.
Well, I blame my dad for dying. It was his fault. I mean, it's not like it was a big shock when you're 6'4 and 420 pounds for, you know, 15 years. It's not a big shock when you're smoking three packs a day, eating two double quarter pounders with cheese every day for lunch and, you know,
right.
start down a six pack of beer every night that you're going to, you know, have heart
problems. Are you the guy to do this guy a whole dead guy's grocery list?
Yeah.
Okay, it's fascinating with this guy ate, but he's dead. That's the point.
Yeah, but Aaron, your parents got divorced and you lost your dad right in a short time. That must have been a very trying time for you.
I put him on hold because he had one of those phone lines that drives me nuts, which is I'd either they drop off or be clear, but that was like, sad. I think James up here shares my story. James?
Yeah?
Also from Portland. What's your story?
Well, hot
quickly.
Chicks in Portland.
This is a fun one. Okay, so my parents separated when I was about 8. I'm 25 now. My mother will give her divorce because you want her strong man. Basically, I really don't know. She's a real person, so she's not exactly the type of person to go out and get what she wants. So she never went out and got the divorce papers, and he just basically said, if you want to, you're going to have to fight for it.
My parents were such losers that when they got divorced, they couldn't even get divorced because it involved probably $142 and some paperwork, and they couldn't even pull that one off. They were both so depressed and so screwed up. So they just moved out, and since there was no assets to divide,
right.
literally nothing to divide, they just moved on.
How about custody of you and your sister? They just said, we'll just split. You guys? Or?
My mom said, how about you take the kids Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and every other Saturday? And my dad argued, how about just Monday and Friday and never on the weekends? And then my mom said, well, I don't want them that much. And it was a strange custody battle. It was who got them most.
Yeah.
Who got them least. No, we just went over to my dad's apartment every couple of days and went over to my mom's flop house every couple of days. And that was about it. But they couldn't stand to see each other. I think they're both embarrassed. All right. We need to take ourselves a break. Good times, though.
Good times.
And all you guys that are in committed relationships, I'm sure it'll last forever. We'll take a quick break. Be right back after this. Well, at least we can go out with some happy music. All right, I want to thank Bobcat Goldthwait, a dear friend and even better director and writer. Sleeping Dogs Lie. It dropped today, everyone, on DVD. Find out what all the critics are talking about. Rachel Harris, our new favorite.
Nope.
Hey, 10 p.m. on ABC. I want to thank Danny Bonaducci for his candor.
And, I want to thank Scott Foster for offering to be my lawyer.
And I'm sure we'll get into this as the days wear on, and we'll keep you all posted. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla saying mahalo.
He's got a very small little doodle.